This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff.
Liftoff.
Hey, everybody. I am back from Las Vegas and CES. This is Garnet Lee. Welcome to Weekend Confirmed. Very glad to be back here. Glad to see Jeff Cannata here. Disappointed that he did not get on King of the Nerds, but...
I was ranting before we started about much I hate the idea that show exists.
I haven't seen it, but I agree with you.
It's just so ridiculous that there's still someone in a room somewhere going, let's make that into a show, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome back, Garnett.
I was just pitching you your lead so that you could talk about as much as you wanted there.
I don't want to talk about it. I don't even want to dignify it.
Yeah. Because there's Mr. Jeff Cannata, who you've heard already. Looking fantastic, sir.
Thank you. Well, welcome back. How was Vegas?
It was Vegas. We might talk about, if you guys are interested, we can talk a little bit about CES during my segment. Because, by the way, today we are debuting a Jeff Cannata original editorial idea for the show. We'll let you in on the secret
My
here.
One idea.
No, it's great. It's a genius idea. We're breaking the show up now where everybody who comes on gets a segment and it's theirs to own. It's not necessarily going to be like...
You break it, you buy it.
They can host it. They can not host it. They can leave it to Jeff and I to sort of run the conversation, but they got to bring the substance. They got to bring the moxie. They got to bring the juice.
I like it.
You like the juice?
I like moxie juice.
So, you know, today, each one of us has a little prepared segment. So we got some fun stuff coming up. Andrea Renee is here from Machinima.com.
Hello, everybody. Always lovely to be here.
You sound very prim.
Oh, well, it's early.
I understand now.
And contrary to popular belief, I'm not drunk on every episode of Weekend Confirmed.
Not yet, Yard!
This Diet Coke ain't gonna get me there, okay? Just so you guys know.
I mean, you got to have goals, right?
Yeah, right.
And Andy Jeff Mattis there at the end of the table.
And I am drunk on every episode of Weekend Confirmed. So
I get drunk on Weekend Confirmed.
You're my role model.
Sorry. No, I'm not actually.
Weekend Confirmed itself intoxicates me.
Yes.
Not to digress too far, because we're going to open with Andrea's segment, which is going to be on Infinity, because she saw Disney's Infinity project. We wanted to talk about that.
We ate sliders together.
Oh, so many good sliders.
Well, Disney does give good sliders.
I was going to say,
spread was amazing.
If you want to hear a report on the food, we can certainly give you one.
However, I want to digress one quick moment before that, because there was a big, I almost used the word, which I'm going to refrain from using. A big video game and sci-fi loving people's debate over the Big Bang Theory that I thought also...
Oh, you can say nerd and geek. You can use those words. It's not offensive.
Well, I know it's not offensive, but I didn't want to bring that. I didn't want to color the conversation by like accusing... Like, you know, I was just trying to leave it open to like how it gets interpreted, because like there was...
I hate that show for the record, by the way.
I hate it as well.
Yeah.
And
the nerds are the butt of the joke.
Exactly.
We're not laughing at them. You guys saw the essay on that, right?
Right. So what initiated this was there was an essay about why I hate the Big Bang Theory. I wish I could remember who did it. Do you have your iPad up? Will you look
up
who did it so
I'll
we can credit them? Because it was a really good thing. And what's cool is like Big Bang Theory has been on for a long ass time.
Yeah.
And I see it. There's a lot of people who like, oddly, there's a lot of people who watch it while I'm in the gym. It's weird.
It's crazy how it's like popular a show it is.
And I've always wondered why every time I turn it on, I'm like, nope.
Well, first of all, I can't watch any show now that has a laugh track. I just can't. Yeah.
In another sidetrack, have you seen the Game of Thrones set to Seinfeld laugh track?
No.
Oh my god.
Amazeballs.
Did you see the thing I tweeted the other day of Darth Vader with Arnold Schwarzenegger's voice?
No.
Oh, it's so great.
There's another one. Anyway, that's apparently a thing. Like you know. Juxtaposing some other person's voice for
it's
Darth
great.
Vader.
Yeah, it's great.
It's fantastic.
It's great to watching Game of Thrones and have like it go to a you know into a fill scene. It's like
it's like the Raven like flying over. Yeah, it's actual footage
People
from
are
the
so
show.
Smart.
Yeah,
it's really
People
funny.
Are smart.
But I think the Big Bang Theory thing really crystallized for me the problem, and it's true. It is that not only are the the three guys in the apartment and then their friend who comes over, like the butt of the joke, it's that they also put Penny right there to be sort of the, you know, snickering,
yeah,
cool person's window on the geeks. It's like, oh, look at the geeks in their natural habitat.
Yeah.
And it's that's it. And it's not funny.
Punchlines to jokes are like Star Trek. You know, it's like that isn't a joke. That's just you just reference to something. I mean, Family Guy made a very good living doing that. But
no, it's reminding me why I hardly watch any TV these days.
That having been said, there were a lot of folks around who defended the show and said, no, it's been, you know, part of the rise of geek and nerd culture. And it's been really strong in, you know, like in making that, you know, making sci-fi and nerdy stuff mainstream.
Both of those things can be true.
I found the blog that it was on. I mean, several people have written about this, but the one that a lot of people in the gaming community were retweeting and talking about on Twitter, I think it was like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, was from a blog called Shouting Into the Void.
Yes.
And it's on But My Opinion Is Right Tumblr. And yeah, you can look it up if you want to read it. It's really, really well written, and it analyzes it and breaks it down in a way that really accurately pinpoints why the so-called geek and nerd community, the true geek and nerd community, can't get behind that show because, you know, as we've been discussing, it's making fun of the very people it's supposed to be highlighting.
Yeah, it just clicked for me. Well, that was well written. Anyway, That's all. I'm just curious what you guys thought.
Yeah. No, I've never been a fan. I know there's a lot of people who are fans, and that's fine, but I don't dig it.
I don't like it either. There's nothing about it that's, like, compelling to me. Especially, like you were talking about with Penny, the way that they portray her character. It's, as a woman in this community, it's really frustrating.
Well, and then, I mean, kind of as a woman in general, because they also sort of play her off as the, like, you know, hair-flipping sort of, like, oh, I'm just here having a good time. Mm-hmm. Look, I wait tables at a restaurant, and... Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems very shallow. It seems
very
shallow.
Whole
I mean, of course, it's a sitcom. So here I am saying, oh, sitcom character is shallow. Surprise.
Well, watch Happy Endings instead.
But it's 2013. I mean, we're beyond that but now. You know what I mean?
And I haven't seen it, but what you guys are saying is it just strikes people that are actually familiar with that culture as disingenuous. Like, it's like, it's just not.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. It's not doing what it's purporting to do. But again, I haven't seen it, so I don't plan on watching it.
Anyway, that was just an interesting distraction that came up, and sorry I got sidetracked on that. So this is Andrea's segment. She went and saw Disney's Infinity, which is their licensed play. Well, I'll let her describe it. It's your segment, dear. How much would you like for – you can use us for support. It's all yours. The table is yours.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, as Jeff mentioned, he was also at the event. We went to the El Capitan Theater, Disney's fancy movie theater here in Hollywood.
One of the most uncomfortable theaters in all of L.A., in my opinion. The seats are terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's old school movie theater as far as, like, the seats go, but the spectacle of going to the Capitan is something that I recommend anybody who is a fan of Disney to go see a movie there at least once, because it is really an experience.
Where I'm totally
it's across
Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, it's right across from Grauman's Chinese Theater. Yeah. Like, it's right across the street.
They have a live organist that plays before all the movies, and they'll often pair big Disney movie releases with like a live stage pre-show. So it's fun. You bring kids there, and they'll have stuff in the lobby. They'll have like big props from the movie and stuff.
They'll start selling tickets for those things like weeks before the movie comes out.
And they're expensive. It's like $25 a ticket to go.
Yeah, but they do like, you know, if the new big Pixar movie comes out, they'll have a live show and they'll dress up the whole theater in a really fun way. It's cool. It's just a really uncomfortable, bad theater. But anyway, okay. That's neither here nor there.
So they unveiled Disney Infinity. This was, you know, reported on, I think, originally by Polygon that they were going to make this announcement. And at first glance, the first thing that comes to mind is Skylanders when you first see it, with the figures and the interactive gameplay. And it does kind of feel like Skylanders in that sense, but it's not Skylanders. There's so much more to this game than I think Activision is doing currently with Skylanders. And we can talk about like the, you know, the ups and downs of having attached IP, because we talked about that briefly at the show about how Activision doesn't have these pre-existing IPs that they have to work with, so they can really do whatever they want in their world, whereas Disney has these pre-existing IPs with their defined worlds and defined characters, but they own all those IPs, so technically they could really move them around and change them however they wanted to. But so let's talk about the gameplay.
Yeah, rewind me like a little bit, because I didn't have a chance to follow this other than people tweeting about it. And my impression was,
the concept is very
complex. Infinity knockoff.
It's very complex, and it's like almost obtuse to the consumer, because it's so, they're talking about it like a platform, like a new platform, and it'll have, you know, across all the consoles and handhelds and mobile devices, there's going to be a version of this thing. But also, it's from the guys that did the Toy Story 3 game, and in that game there was this toy box mode. And so toy box mode is one big component of it, but there's also these play sets. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, sure.
So you have to, you can buy these play sets,
which are actually physical toys.
No. The figures are the physical toys. So the toys, I know. Okay, so here's.
So the play sets aren't play sets, but there are toys that are play sets.
Right. So let's not talk. Let's talk about the actual physical pieces in just a moment, and talk about the actual gameplay. So there's two types of modes in the game. One mode is playset mode. The other mode is toy box mode. The first three playsets that were announced for Infinity for playset mode were the Pirates of the Caribbean, the Incredibles, and Monsters University. So within each of these playsets, they're almost like, I don't want to call it a mini game, because it's more like a world that you go to with from like a hub. There's gonna be some kind of hub world, assuming.
Wait, so. Maybe I was not clear during the presentation, but I thought those were separate products to the toy box product. I didn't think that they were modes within the same product.
No, they're in the same game.
Okay.
Yeah, because you have the Disney Infinity disc, and on the disc there will be playsets, and then there will be toy box mode. And I believe the three that are announced are the three that are going to come on the disc. That I still have to like confirm. I want to get some more details on that, but they're going to add onto this IP, obviously, continually, like for the next couple of years.
Right now, all we're talking about is virtual stuff, video game stuff.
Right. This is
It goes hand in hand.
I know. That's what. But toy box does not mean toy box literally.
Literally,
playset does not mean playset literally.
You get home this box for your PS3.
Think of it as a game mode.
You
put the game in, and there's like a Incredibles world, and there's a Pirates of the Caribbean world.
Right.
Yeah. And Pirates and Incredibles dudes can't go into the Pirates of the Caribbean world. They are walled gardens for their own IP.
I can understand that, I guess.
Right. Those play sets are built for those specific IP, and if you want to play Pirates of the Caribbean, you have this game in which Pirates of the Caribbean people do Pirates of the Caribbean stuff in a Pirates of the Caribbean world.
Right, which is really cool, because they've really tailored each play set to the IP that it's designed around. For example, in the Pirates world, you play as Captain Jack Sparrow, and the combat has an emphasis on sword play, because swords are the weapon of choice for pirates. And there's also, they said 50% of the gameplay in the Pirates playset is focused on your ship, on customizing your ship, on customizing your crew. You can actually customize each individual crew member on your ship. You can play multiplayer with your friends. So if there's two of you playing, one person can be helming the ship as the captain and actually like steering, and another person can be manning the different kinds of specialty cannons. So when enemies come, you can like battle them together.
I found all this stuff to be by far the least interesting bit of the presentation, and really, I mean, they look like sort of second tier licensed games.
Well, so
that
I,
were sort
that's
of just
not
sort
good.
Of, so yeah, I saw the trailer too, and my impression coming away from that, without it being at the event, without seeing anything else, was okay, this is kind of a neat idea. Like, this is definitely going to be a big cash grab for them. But in terms of what you would actually be doing,
yes,
mm-hmm.
that's
I have
a big
no
point.
Idea. Like,
well,
what,
that in those playsets, it really is. What you've expected from any kind of go to the store and buy the Toy Story game, and it's like crappy combat with all the characters from the movie in their little world. Like the monsters.
That's not so cool.
Monsters University that they showed looked really, really simplistic. I mean, it's made for kids, obviously, but all that stuff is really tertiary to what the possibility of this platform is, but unfortunately it's the majority of the shit you do, which is really a big bummer.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that. I think what we haven't seen enough of this actual, like, the fleshed out game. We just saw what they wanted us to see, right? As with any kind of announcement. But, I mean, I agree that even though I find that really interesting that they are tailoring these playsets to the world, so they're unique because of a nostalgia factor maybe for me and seeing some of the stuff and going, I think that that could be really great. I would love to play in some of these worlds from movies that I loved as a kid. Like, imagine going into, like, the Sleeping Beauty world or the Snow White world or, you know, the Lion King world.
None of that, by the way.
I love the Aladdin game, by the way. One of my favorites. Yeah.
Genesis version? Yeah, it's a great game. But none of the classic Disney IPs. Characters or worlds were on display.
Not yet, no. There's obviously a lot for them
and
to choose
in the
from.
Big,
but
in the big reveal picture of is like, this is what Infinity is. And it was all
predominantly Pixar characters,
and
yes.
Pirates of the Caribbean characters.
Easy assets to bring over. So
right, but
not
really. What we really want to talk about is Toy Box
Men. Digital art already.
But they're all these stylized maquette versions. Yeah. None of them is...
Oh, they're not...
No, it has.
There's not a one to one.
It looks like uniform style.
You know the Star Wars Clone Wars sort of maquette looking.
Yeah,
that's the art style because it's based on these physical figures.
Oh right,
that are all in that style.
So here's what worries me
and
beyond
are consistent
that.
Across the figures.
We haven't even gotten to the cool part yet.
Well, we'll get to the cool part. Is they call these things playsets. And the thing about playsets implies to me, like, you know, old school toys where you'd like take home a bunch of toys and lay them out on
that's what they're going for.
The floor. But like the thing of that is that having those physical things in your hands and playing around with them inspires a sort of childlike creativity that no game has really been able to ever duplicate.
Garnet, it sounds like you're reading from their press release because that's exactly what they want you to feel.
But I'm saying no one in a virtual world's ever done that.
The next step is them trying to feed exactly that impulse. Because the next step is that toy box thing where now all these playsets can't be combined.
Right.
But in toy box world...
Yes, in toy box mode, that's where all the IPs can come together and you can really see the creativity. And this is what's really exciting about this title. Something that Skylanders doesn't have, and maybe they'll be inspired by Disney to do something similar, but what they showed us was that toy box mode is essentially what I've been using as a kind of analogy is imagine if you took the creativity and building ability of Minecraft and mashed it up with the customization of building your own levels that Little Big Planet has.
I think it's much more Little Big Planet than it is Minecraft.
Right. I would agree with you. It absolutely is.
It's much more plug and play than Minecraft is.
And you get to do this with Disney IP and all kinds of Disney IP. I mean, you get to bring in customizable items from different IPs. Like you can get Cinderella's pumpkin carriage. They showed us as just like an item that you can get.
And you make an important point there because I think that's where they really one up Skylanders from a cha-ching perspective.
Uh-huh.
Is not only
sell all that stuff as microtransactions
as physical shit.
Yeah.
So you're buying a figure that works like Skylanders where you plug it into a base and then that guy goes into your game. But you're also buying these chips and the little chips
power discs.
Yeah, power discs. Right. These little chips have items on them or locations, and you put those on the power pad or whatever the fuck it's called.
It's called the Infinity
the
Portal.
The Disney cash machine.
It's called
and
the
those
cash
show
register,
up,
the
those
Disney
show up in your
ATM.
Game as well, and any character that you have can use them. So the real cool thing...
Can mom just put her credit card on top of it and just leave
I'm sure they will
there.
Have that attachment.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the cool thing. The cool thing is they have all these characters that you actually like that can interact in this toy box world in a world that you can make a la Little Big Planet where you're like slapping Disney's castle with a different skin. For my money, the creativity part is really questionable, but it's there.
Why do you call it questionable?
Because all the stuff they showed was like, it's the same. It's you're yanking, you know, Jack Skellington's house and sticking it next to the Impossible's street, and you have Monsters University's cactus plant in front of it, and you slap like a polka dot skin on all that stuff.
That's just eclectic. That's not creative.
No, that's,
well,
no,
it can
no, no.
be creative
that's
for
just
kids.
Your vision. What they showed with recreating Bowser's castle from Mario Kart in that
world.
Well,
it does seem to have a lot of that Little Big Planet.
That,
like you can make
really
mini games,
cool.
which I agree does look cool. Does look cool that you can create these mini games, which I would argue is beyond the capability of the kids they're marketing to.
Oh, I think that you're underestimating the audience, because I think that Disney appeals to all generations. I think everyone that I talked to about this game at my office was super excited about this announcement, saying, oh my gosh, I'm going to spend so much money on those little figures, because all of us have like toys at our desks, even if we don't use them in the game, just to have the toy, because the toys are really cool looking. And I think that based off what we've seen from the Little Big Planet community, and even going into Little Big Planet 2, there have been some amazing things from the community that have come out of that. And I think that with the right tools, people will make really awesome stuff. And I think that even Disney doesn't understand the untapped creativity of the community.
It's certainly possible, and I hope I'm wrong. I was much less excited about what I saw than I wanted to be. I think that the figures are super cool.
I'm confused to hear you say that, because what I've heard so far for the first 20 minutes I was talking about it is, this is awesome, this is excellent, this is cool, and I'm sort of reacting like,
well, I've been trying to temper that a little bit. I'm trying to acknowledge what I do think is cool, which is you can have this mashup section of these games, this toy box world, where you're bringing together, you know, disparate elements from all these different Disney properties. That's neat. The fact that you can plug and play items, and so you can add, you know, they showed this like toilet paper shooter gun thing, which shoots toilet paper, and you can stick that in any character's hand and have any character ride in Cinderella's coach and all this. That's fun from a imagination standpoint from kids.
It's like a virtual dollhouse though. Like, yeah. Like what do you do? Like,
that's, I mean, like that's like, the biggest problem.
Like, I mean, collecting shit's great, but like, you know, at least when you're buying toys as a kid, you're like, okay, now I'm going to play with my toys and do my little imaginary scenarios. Whereas, you know,
well, they have these. Well, one of the things that you can do, since you asked, is that they have these extensive tutorials that you can go through. And what's really cool about the
tutorials, kids, don't you love tutorials?
Good job.
Hold the phone. Before you knock on it, like what was I thought was interesting is sometimes tutorials can be very bland and dry and boring, but these tutorials are specifically crafted around each character that you use. So if you go into the tutorial as Wreck-It Ralph, it's going to be themed towards him. If you go into the tutorial as Jack Sparrow, it's going to be themed towards him.
Wouldn't that stand a reason?
Well, no, it's much bigger than what you are probably thinking. I mean, like the whole that you're in has a different
Yeah, it changes
to it.
Based off
it's
who you're.
It's pretty neat.
I mean, they're trying, but that seems like the whole play here is based around everything being themed around whatever you're playing with that time.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody followed my live tweet of the such that it was of the event, but the thing that was going through my head as the idea was rolling out was, oh my God, did Disney figure out a way to do Skylanders without combat, where you're world and creativity is the driving force, like Minecraft is, where it really is about building? Nope, they didn't. It's fucking combat. It's run around and smack something and hit A to do an attack, and it's different. You know, the pirate's attack is different than the monster's attack is different than the Incredibles attack.
Negative Nancy, my gosh, that's not true at all. In the Monsters University plays that, they said there is no combat, that the focus is on customization and humor, because that's what that IP is about.
What do they show? You run up to an enemy and you scare them, which is basically, they said there's no combat in the sense that you don't hit anything. But it's the same binary bullshit. That like they aren't pushing as much as they're pushing forward this idea of interactivity with the world and like these cool figures, and you can mash up these different IP, and that all that stuff is so exciting, and it's like, awesome, what do I get to do
exactly,
like what do I get to do? I get to fucking either play in the playset and do this boring like bad licensed game type gameplay, or I get to build like Little Big Planet in a 3D world, which is cool, but I have to make my own racing game, and I have to make my, like, there's not.
And that's why when people were so quickly to be like making comparisons to Skylanders, I was questioning it, because now even more listening to it, I mean, the thing that I think oftentimes gets overlooked about Skylanders is the game part of Skylanders is really good.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It is.
It's simple. and it's straightforward, and it's good and elegant because of that. And so the interplay with the toys really works, because once you get your virtual character into the game and are playing, there's a really fun, you know, action Diablo-like run around and have a good time game.
And listen, I want to be wrong about this. I'm just expressing my takeaway from the event, because we only saw, you know, a vertical slice of what's going on. And I want to be wrong, but I just really felt like they dropped the ball big time in pushing forward what you can do in these games. And Lasseter kept talking about creativity this, creativity that, creativity this. But then what they showed from creativity standpoint,
it's all been done. I mean,
it's
like, the whole make-your-own-fun thing doesn't really fly in games as much. I mean, yes, there are certain examples like Minecraft that really sort of, you know, ignite people's imaginations and they run away with it. But I mean, Little Big Planet ran into the same problem, and yeah, that's got a dedicated community as well. But the act of, you know, that's why I laugh now whenever I see a game includes a level editor or a level designer, because it's like, I go, yeah, that's a great concept. Like, I hope that people that are really into this really go to town and do that. But as average Joe consumer, it's, I want to get in there and have fun. I don't want to get in there and
it looked like it's so much more Halo Forge than it did Minecraft.
Well, I agree that they're not necessarily reinventing the wheel here, but I think that you guys are underestimating the draw of Disney's stable of IP.
I don't think it's not going to make money. I'm not criticizing that.
No, I'm saying that's why people, I think, are going to be drawn to Toy Box Mode and maybe get inspired, because it's you know, tugs on their heartstrings. It's like these characters that they grew up with, or these new characters that they've come to love, you know, and that they get to play with them in a way that they maybe have never even thought about before.
Let me just say,
I understand that, like, from a cost perspective, that it is a little daunting, but just so you guys know that not every piece is you have to pay for. You get to unlock characters and unlock items and unlock places and stuff throughout the world by accomplishing certain tasks and stuff like that. So it's not all, like, you don't have to pay for everything.
Let me present this way of looking at it, because this is how I felt. I love Lego and grew up playing them, still love them to this day. But there was a period of time in my life where Lego went from having the tiny little bricks and making something to, there was this period there, and it's not so much anymore, but still a little
bit. It was
all
box kits.
Where it was like, there'd be one piece that was like half the hull of a ship, or one piece that was like an entire wing of a plane. And I was like, well, fuck, I don't want that. I want like 50 pieces that make up the hull of the ship or the wing of the plane. Mm-hmm. And it's less fun when you take one giant thing and you stick it down than it is to build up. And I think that is why Minecraft is brilliant and fun and creative.
That's a great point.
And Little Big Planet is less so. And you can make really great, wonderful things in Little Big Planet, but they're all sort of like a big-ass piece that you've unlocked.
It's repurposed stuff, right? It's not like, oh, I created this brand-new thing that, you know, like nobody's ever seen before and you guys are going to love this. It's like you look at that and you're like, oh, you grabbed the piece and, oh, that was really clever and creative, but at the end of the day, I can just do the same exact thing you did by slapping those
And that's very much what this looks like to me.
Andrea, it's your segment. Take it to the bridge.
Well, I really want you to eat crow on this, Jeff, because I think that you're going to be wrong.
I think
you're going to be wrong about this. I have a lot of hope that Disney has done such a great thing with all of their IPs. Like, I mean, Disney, they rarely fail in what they do, and there's a reason why they're as big as they are. Not to mention, I really want to see how they're going to integrate Marvel and Star Wars into this, because it would be stupid if they don't. But I think that this is going to blow Activision's haul that they made with Skylanders out of the water. I think they're going to make billions of dollars with this. And
I don't doubt that.
To the break.
Can I just say, if I do eat crow, can they be the crows from Dumbo?
Yes, they can.
Okay, cool.
Tell them to stick around.
Of course. Well, we have lots of other great stuff coming up, and I'm particularly interested in hearing about Path of Exile. We're talking about that later, right?
That's going to be the fourth. Jeff, you get to be your bat and cleanup. It's your deal. It's your bat and cleanup.
Exciting.
All right. Well, who's up next? Who's on deck?
The pretty girl with the hand in the air.
G-Money. All right. So we're going to hear from Garnet on the other side.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to this. You want to play all the latest video games? Well, try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Number one! Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95.
That's $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC, Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. Here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, and there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. It's just $5.95 to start! Did I mention that's their lowest price ever? Simply sign up, pick your games, and Gamefly will rush them to your door. Go to Gamefly.com, that's GameFly.com, and sign up today.
The man with the excitement says that he wants to carry over...
Just one quick thing.
My wayward son.
By the way, it's not my fault that my voice made that sound. It's the font. They wrote the font that they wrote.
You should have just done it all in a British accent. It would have been fine.
I just want to say one more quick thing, and then you can have your segment going.
Sure.
And that is, you know, we were talking a lot a few weeks ago about... the idea of these figurines, I think I brought up the idea of these figurines being an interesting way to combat piracy and the idea of used games that stuff, which it certainly is. And I had this crazy idea that I wanted to throw out to you guys. Crazy idea that will never happen. But what if there was a console and one of the new consoles that came out where this was standard? Every game that comes out on the console has a figure or some sort of physical item that you plug into the base and you bring your character from game to game or whatever it is, and that across the entire console, every release, awesome AAA games, big games, small games, they all had physical things that you plugged into.
You mean like a disc?
Nice, well done. No, not like a disc. Well, you go to the store and you buy the disc and it comes with a fucking thing.
Right. Well, here,
how about if we mount it on the controller so when you're playing, you've got like this giant figure right there on the, it's like the horn of your controller.
But the characters you buy for Skylanders and for this, they're not actual, they're figures that you put on, you don't pose them, they don't,
no,
like,
right.
Like,
they're just maquettes. They're like little,
I mean, I don't know.
You think that's a terrible idea?
Well, no. I think it's a great moneymaker, and I think if you were someone like Disney with a huge stable of crap to sell, like, that is, I'm surprised they didn't do
that. What about, like, Gears of War, Metal Gear Solid?
I don't want to buy, I don't know. I don't need any more tchotchkes and crap.
Okay.
I need the game, that's it.
Maybe the people in the talkback will have interesting reactions.
I don't know how to respond to that.
Okay, your segment. Go ahead.
I see. There's kind of part of me that goes, okay, because I like figures, but then I'm like, I don't want to, like, why do I want to have that associated with every game?
It'll become like Guitar Hero, where they're just in the corner collecting dust.
How many games do you have in your house right now?
There's a potential for something cool of like, of disconnecting the character from the game, so you could have your, like, it still has the you know, upload the data into the physical thing, into the base of the physical.
What if they all came with a bracelet?
All right, everybody's just mocking me.
Or what if there's like a memory card you could actually play with on the go? And oh wait,
like a VMU?
Yeah,
but I mean, like, you could bring one character in a different game, like games that support it. You could. I don't know.
We can all do that via the cloud now. Why would we need a physical item for that?
Everybody's making fun of me. I just am a dreamer.
Be awesome, actually, because now, like, you're walking down the street and you can see all your bracelets on your arm. You could be like, hey, that dude is playing Deus Ex, Assassin's Creed 3, Gears of War.
Either that or he's going to the Electric Daisy Carnival.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the two, I don't know.
And maybe, like, when you walk by people who've had the same game experiences or stuff, like, your bracelets would flash and they'd, like, flash in rhythm with each other.
Steve Jobs, too, and Henry Ford.
That's right. That's
they told him, you'll never work in this town again, Henry. Wear your bracelets.
Every game should come with a keychain.
Oh, and they'll have like a little shock on the inside, so you'll know that, like, when you're like, oh, look, oh, God, there's someone near me who played Gran Turismo.
Really? A theory of relativity, Albert? No one will believe it. That's what they said to him, too.
No. They and then he built the A-bomb, and what happened?
Then he showed them.
Yeah, that's right.
He showed them.
So I thought I'd use my time to talk about a couple of things. One of them quickly being CES, since I was there last week. But I honestly have very little to say about CES, so I thought I would just ask you guys what, if anything, as gamers, you were interested to know about CES?
4K TVs, bro.
4K TV, bro.
Did you get to play with the game stick?
Play with my game stick? What are you talking about? It's the game stick.
Don't tell me you don't know about the game stick.
I don't know about the game stick.
That's what the kids
are talking. Keep in mind that most of the time I was at CES, I was taking meetings and working on publishing stuff. So, like, I spent half of a day.
You mean you were actually working?
I was actually working. I spent half of a day on Thursday on the show floor.
You saw them 4K TV, right, man?
I did go look at the 4K TVs. I had to go look at the 4K TVs. They're pretty freaking awesome.
It's like a substantial difference, right?
Even just running 1080p upscaled, because keep in mind, there's not much 4K content. So, right. A lot of the booths were just like, and they had like a thing on there that said, this is 1080p HD. Upscaled, dude, they're ridiculous. The Samsung 110 inch, I was just sat there like this. I want to play games on this. It's amazing. See, it's awesome. So
was it just
amazing.
Because it's 110 inches?
Well, that was part of it, but also just like it, if you remember what it was like when you went from even large screen tubes to the second or third generation of HD, when HD really hit and you were like, wow, this looks amazing. Mm-hmm. It does actually look that much over that.
That's exactly, and it's astounding. What I want to hear.
It's astounding.
It's not my wallet wants to hear, but it's what I want.
Yeah,
to hear.
I remember looking at the OLEDs last year at CES and being blown away by that. And now having 4K, I mean, it's just too expensive, though. I mean,
it's
going to come down. Don't you worry.
And by the way, actually, for early tech, I believe Samsung said that they were taking pre-orders for that 110, or maybe it was the 86 in Korea, for like 30,000. Okay.
Jesus.
Now, admittedly, crazy talk, right?
Yeah.
However, if you think about it in terms of how quickly...
Only if you think about it in terms of money.
Right. If you think about it in terms of how fast technology moves, today's 30,000, like, that means that within a couple of years, it's going to be consumer grade tech.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
That's how
now, the problem is, how do you get freaking 4K content to anybody?
Right. I remember how long the jump to HD took.
PS4.
Even with like the broadcast deadline to go HD. I mean, it was almost like between when HD first came out to the market and went
Don't you think that's what Sony wants? Sony wants people to buy 4K and they need a new freaking delivery device for that. And then,
well, everybody wants you to buy that.
Yeah. Put it in the consoles, bruh.
So that having been said,
bruh.
In spite of that, or in comparison to that, in Panasonic's booth, they had their new, I forget, ZX or ZT grade plasma, and it's almost that beautiful looking on 1080p content.
You said almost, so
dude. It's but by out. The way, it's something you could afford to go buy this year,
right?
And it's ISF certified, and it's like, I think that's the, isn't that the calibration company? It's, you know how there's a calibration organization for televisions?
Yes.
So it's certified by them, and it comes with a calibration device with the rosette that you put on the screen and handles all the, and dude, even in a show floor where there were 4K televisions, this television stood out as, holy crap, this thing's amazing. Hmm. So... you know, I think that that's part of why the problem of like 4Ks are a cool CES event, but as a real consumer product, how do we get content to them? And how long does it take for the price to come down? And by the time the price comes down, has something else already eclipsed them as the gee whiz technology?
8K.
Or whatever it might be, right?
It's like concept car time at this stage anyway.
Well, yeah, but I want to get excited about that stuff, and I want that stuff.
But they're not concept car screens. I mean, they're real screens.
No, they're real screens.
They are real screens but that are doable.
And you will be able to buy them.
For $30,000. Yeah, but
if you don't
want to
buy a car this year.
Yeah. Or live in a house.
I don't think anyone say don't get excited about it. I think they're absolutely worth getting excited over. It's tough for me to get excited because I know it's so far away from something that I could have.
It's not that far away. It's not going to be that far away. The way things go,
they're not going to come down to like $2,000 in a matter of 5 years. You don't think?
Yeah, they will.
In 5 years?
Less than five years.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
2.5 years.
If they want to sell
4K
them.
OLED is going to be $2,000 in 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years ago, was the... I bought a
720p LCD 42-inch TV for $1,000.
Not me, dude. 5 years ago, that was like Half-Life 2 came out. I bought my first 720p 32-inch television, and I paid $3,500 for it. I paid $3,500 for it, and it was
awful. But I loved it.
And the differentiation we've had since the evolution of 720p and 1080p has been in 3D, has been in smart TVs, has been in screen technology improvements. So what you buy today for a reasonable amount of money at wherever you buy, at Amazon, Best Buy, you know, local TV store, is pretty far and away from what was even being shown at CES just a couple of years ago.
And listen, audience, I realize I overreached with 2.5 years. Like, that's my
maybe you didn't.
That's my hope.
Maybe it's possible, you but didn't. Because I'm so then as a gamer, for me, the big thing is people talk about, like, I want to play games on this big screen. Yeah. I want to play games
Hell
on this
yeah.
screen because it looks amazing. And then I want us to get forward to the time when my wall is a screen. I want my wall of my living room to be an entire video panel.
Let's make it happen. Mm-hmm. All you need to do is live in an 110-inch house. But Garnett, before you left for CES, we talked about this, and you were not excited about 4K, and now you've come back and you are excited about 4K.
Well,
they are
pretty glamorous.
This is good.
The screen tech is pretty.
So now,
damn
do you
amazing.
Feel like you want that kind of output in the next generation consoles to work up towards? Because if the console cycle is as long as this one has been,
yeah,
we want that in there, right? Well, come to the dark side, Garnett.
One of the more exciting things about that to me is that the couple of games, and there aren't that many good 3D games out there, but the couple that I have played in 3D that I liked, I was like, man, I really wish they could squeeze all of the texture detail into these. But you can tell that they're not. They're scaling it down because it does multiple passes for the 3D effect.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This could theoretically, if the console manufacturers or the software developers and 4K TVs, you know, meet up in the middle, you could have really, really good looking HD 3D stuff.
Yeah, but
that
I think
would
my,
be amazing.
I think my answer has to split on emotion versus technology. So, like, the technology side of me says, yeah, that would be awesome, a like, great resolution, fantastic screens. And then my emotion side says, you know, even two generation jumps ago, I was emotionally hoping that we'd stop just being focused on improving visuals in games and move on to, you know, better AI, better logic, and better core game mechanics underpinnings, like and having the hardware to support letting a programmer and designer do more with the game. Mm-hmm. And if you were to put in 4K support in the sort of boxes that are being talked about right now, you'd basically probably chew up all of the new overhead that you get in process. Because keep in mind,
you're not wrong. Talking,
the two machines that have been like basically leak specs for Orbis are a 4-core, 3-point-something gigahertz processing system with 4 gigs of RAM, but it's pretty fast RAM. Whereas the Xbox is rumored to be a 8-core unit running at a lower clock speed. But of course, now you've got 8 pathways, although one of them is supposed to be reserved for OS. But I mean, that's modern era computing power. So if you crank the resolution up on top of that, and
I hear you.
You're going to eat up all the extra bandwidth.
But if you're talking something closer to a Kepler GPU, you know, it becomes a little less sort of unreasonable to think that could
I don't know. If you're having to, so if you're maybe to render the screen, like we offload that to the GPU, but we've still got to do all of the environment modeling and we've got to do all the collision detection at that higher resolution, which is going to chew up a lot of processing cycles.
No, that is true.
I just feel like, you know, I'm going to be all excited about these new consoles, get them, and then 4 or 5 years later,
you're not going to be upset about them. 4K is going to be a ways coming. 4K is
just got done saying how it wasn't.
But it's not. It's not, but it is.
No, I said it was. You guys said it was.
The cool part is that much like having, you know, high-tech R&D projects out there brings new technology into consumer spaces, I think that same thing will happen. Is technologies that are being developed around bringing those down will seep into all of the screens and stuff that we buy. Sites, are you going to buy a new television in the next 2 years?
If I can.
Wait, you just won a big, beautiful television, didn't you?
Yeah.
Why would you buy one?
Because there's better ones.
Of course. Of course.
He's like, I need a new TV.
Newest, latest, best, dude. That's my...
All right.
So I wanted to hear if you saw or stopped by the XI3 booth and saw the Piston. The steam box.
Yeah, it looks like a carburetor adapter from a 454 Chevelle.
It's kind of cool, though.
It's kind of cool. I mean, so the idea behind the steam box and having that standardized piece of hardware has been kicked around for a long time. And I mean, there's no, I think the story about steam box after we got word of what it really was that there was no new story there. Is that it is what you thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing magic about that. Mm-hmm. And hooking up TVs to PCs is very much late 2012, and it's going to be a big trend in 2013.
The big difference being that now we have these really interesting form factors that don't feel like a MIDI tower case in your living room.
Yeah, I have to say that, like, walking around the show floor, when you go past the traditional gaming PC case manufacturers like Lan Li,
yeah,
and they've got these monstrous, ridiculous looking, you know, gargantuan cases that a few years ago, like, a builder would walk by and go, that's awesome! And now you kind of go by and go, yeah, that would not really fit in my entertainment center.
Right.
You're thinking, I want to get something that's going to fit in my entertainment center and still hold all the high-end gear that I want it to, and right, be a nice, you know, a nice neighbor with my, you know, my gear.
Yeah, and that's where we are now, and I think that's
you talking
that's
about
cool.
My gear? Sorry, I had a bad Santa reference. yeah, so that was that. And shit tons of mobile stuff. The other thing about CES is it's become, look, they always talk about gaming. There's no gaming there, period. That's done. Forget about that.
Well, now that Microsoft is gone, last year at CES, Microsoft showed a lot of their up and coming XBLA games on the show floor, which I was really happy about. But they're gone now.
They were gone. And it was sort of a, excuse me. It was sort of an iPhone case swap meet in areas. I mean, there were ridiculous numbers of iPhone cases and iPhone doodads. Android, obviously, huge player on the floor. Sony's mobile looked pretty good. You know, their Sony PlayStation Mobile looked pretty interesting, although I think that their insistence of virtual controls on the screen is very old-minded. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird to see, like, it's like, you guys are moving into mobile and you have this good platform, but then you're forcing this like virtual stick and virtual buttons on everything. So it has like this weird compatibility across your other devices. Like just figure that out. That's not the way
just
forward.
Just get them a MOGA controller and they're good to go.
That being said, the new Xperia phone is really, really nice. Hmm. The one that won a bunch of the awards, like it won the CNET award and like a couple of the other best of shows. This is a really, really nice handset if you're in the market for a phone. I mean, but that's not really what we talk about. I don't know. There was dancing Bluetooth cats.
Yay.
There was lots of dumb stuff too. It is kind of fun to walk around and like look at all the dumb stuff. But that's the thing is CES has sort of become like a sideshow without a main event.
Mm-hmm. In the celebrity of it, because I remember you mentioned dancing Bluetooth cats. There was a dancing Bluetooth robot that Justin Bieber unveiled last year that I covered, and it was like pandemonium because all these celebrities come and do these, like Snooki had like an iPhone accessory line,
she
and
was bringing sexy,
you know, all kinds of random celebrities just appearing at CES, like hawking their shit, you know.
Well, the reason it's a sideshow is because all of the biggest manufacturers have their own events.
They do their own thing now, right? And exactly.
They don't need CES. They got their own thing.
Exactly. So moving on, I wanted to talk a little bit about game endings because I got to and finished Dishonored, and I played through Dishonored slow, and I had a fantastic... By the way, I love Dishonored, so before you guys think I'm soured on this, I loved Dishonored. I really, really had a fantastic time playing it. It was a very, very close contender for my game of the year for 2012. And I found that
what was your game of the year for 2012?
Journey.
Ah,
I wound
not
up
not a
going,
bad choice at all.
I wound up going, like I and I talked about this in the question of the week video that I did is that I went through a tremendous like I probably had the hardest time deciding what to vote for in game of the year for 2012 ever, and I heard the argument that's because there wasn't a great standout game.
We had that argument on this show. We had to retread it.
I still maintain, having gone through it so many times, that it's because there were so many really good games, and you just and they were in different ways. They were great in different ways, and they spoke to you in different ways. And in the end, I was swayed somewhat by my conversations with Ariel and thinking about, you know, like emotional response and. And I mean, there was just something.
She got chickified.
I got chickified. There was, dude, but
that was stupid.
But yet, there was something
for that. She didn't even pay attention.
There was something magical about Journey.
Yeah,
now, that's great. I wanted there to be something magical about Dishonored, and I think that in the game mechanics area, it succeeded there because you were able to do so many things. You were able to approach things so many different ways. And as I've learned from talking to people, later on in the game, not even functional, parts of the way the game happened changed based off of what you had done. Specifically, like, I'll try very hard not to spoil things too much, but when you get to the final level, the entire setup for how the players that you're going to go face off against are arranged and who they are and where they are is dictated by whether you're high chaos or low chaos. And it's very different. It's very different. My problem is that throughout the game, I was trying to give it a pass for its inability to equal the game mechanics in its narrative, which I really was like, how does a game... So many times games have good or creative and fun narrative ideas, but then they can't find a way to express themselves through the moment-to-moment holding the controller playing the game. This right. game, you're holding the controller, you're having a great time, and despite the fact that they set things upright, they seem completely unable to deliver a good narrative with it. And
that's
it's
funny
really
because I was saying the opposite is more often true.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
No. I'm saying the opposite of what you're saying is more often true. I feel like
really?
Games more often nail the playing and have a hard time delivering any kind of narrative that's worth a damn.
So I agree with that. What I'm saying is that they're really usually the part of playing the game is mechanistic and can be handled correctly, but it doesn't really contribute to the story.
Now, do you think in Dishonored's case it had anything to do with the fact that because you could be, you know, stylistically completely different, you could be super violent or you could be super stealthy, is, you know, reconciling those narratives into a common sort of thread that everyone experiences could be more challenging, so maybe they sort of shuffled that off to the moment-to-moment gameplay and the encounters that you have, as opposed to here's a cutscene, here's like the, you know, where people are doing, and here's, I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that
I haven't finished it yet, so I don't know.
I really am on the fence about Dishonored. I don't want to say that I love it, but I also don't want to say that I didn't like it, because there were things that I really loved about it, and there were things that I really hated about it. And I think one of the things was that I got really frustrated with the way that the narrative and the mechanics intersected, because I feel like they set you up as this like super human, super powered assassin, but then the game punishes you for killing people. And I was like, I don't understand. So when I first started, I was like, well, maybe if I kill them and then I hide the body so no one knows, then I won't get in trouble. But no, the game knows that you killed them and then you're punished.
Well, it only punishes you if you perceive that as punishment. You can finish the game playing that way.
Oh, no, and I did. I did high chaos the whole game.
So that's not punishment. It's only punishment to you because you're perceiving that being the bad guy is a punishment.
Not necessarily, because there are lots of lines of dialogue, particularly in the later sections of the game, where like your allies say how they're disappointed in you. Like, I can't believe you're such a monster for killing all those people. And even Emily, like at one point, like gets to the, like says stuff to you, and I'm just like, wait a minute, but I'm not the bad guy.
But I think that's to Garnett's point. It's exactly what he's saying, is that your perception of that is negative, which is perfectly valid, but
you are playing the assassin, the game, being the, like, I'm going around killing everybody.
But I thought that was my role as the
but how could
detective.
That, whether you thought that was your role or not, like,
you have
there's
to own
not
it.
So well,
the game isn't this. I mean, you can perceive it as punishing you, but it's not really punishing you. It's just kind of giving you consequences for that kind of
right,
behavior.
Which I think is such a. I commend them for making a unique experience, because as a gamer who plays a lot of shooting games, you're never really put in the position of being the bad guy. I mean, even look at a game like Uncharted,
How interesting is that then?
No, it is, because like you're not the bad guy, but you still kill a lot of people, right? You're still the good guy. And I just thought it was unique that the people that are supposed to be your allies peg you as the bad guy for doing what they sent you out to do.
Well, if you just go out and take out your targets, you're a good assassin. If you murder everyone, you're a serial killer. You know, there's a distinction, and you have free agency to make that choice in the game. Like, you can go, okay, you know, it's stabby time, and everyone's getting a shank, but that's
see, I thought
not
in that regard.
You get a shank, and you get a shank, and you get a shank.
Oh, I forgot about you.
Everybody gets a shank.
And I shanked everybody in that game, I'm telling you. But no, that's a very valid point. Like, I didn't think about it that way, but you're right. Like, I mean, as an assassin, you shouldn't be killing everyone in your path.
Right. And that's one of the things that I thought really worked about it from the playing of the game standpoint, is that it made you think about those things. So to try and rephrase, because I feel like I'm still not, and this is a tough idea. This I've had trouble wrapping my head around this in general is when I was playing the game and playing the game part, I felt like Corvo. When it went to narrative time, I no longer felt like I was Corvo. It was very much like, oh, like, here's this weird story that they're giving me to try and, like, it's as if there was, like, this weird, stupid dream going on. But then I was playing Corvo, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm the assassin. I'm playing Corvo. This is cool. And then the narrative would come in, oh, God, really? They're going to butcher this again. And then it's like, bam, back to playing Corvo again. And the ultimate expression of that was the low chaos ending, which is one of the train wreck disaster worst endings in a game I think I have ever seen. Like, after all of the build up to get there.
Wait, should we do a minor spoiler alert here? Do you just want to blow it?
No, I'm not going to spoil it. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil it. If you're playing the game right now, just know that if you're playing...
Just know you have something shitty to look at.
Unless you play high chaos.
Yeah, if you're playing low chaos, enjoy the low chaos playthrough for all that it's worth, because there's so many great moments that you get to enjoy of, like, finding ways around places. There's so many great detailed ways to get through levels and avoid detection and do different things. And I mean, I got to where I was like a real, like really had like these cool combinations of, you know, like jump, blink, time stop, jump, blink, like that, like crazy stuff. There was one mission where, like, there was just lots of really cool things to do that then when I got to the end, I'm like, wait, not only is not this not gonna be a good ending, it's gonna be this, it's not that it's a bad ending because it's the good ending, but it's this poorly executed.
It was disappointing.
It was more than disappointing. It was just,
well, I mean,
it was just downright bad.
This is the, I believe this time last year, we were having similar discussions about a different game with a 3 in its title.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was why, so unfortunately, we've like burned up most of this segment, but that was actually what I want to get it to is I want to like reopen that Pandora's box of like, what the hell? Why is it so damn hard to get...
It's
these
hard
games.
To end any kind of fiction. Endings are hard.
I agree.
And it's definitely hard when you involve player choice, right? Because you're never going to please everybody. And when you make there be multiple options for you to get to the end, I mean, you're going to disappoint some people along the way.
I tend to think, and this is something that I remember John Davison and I talking about back on one of yours years and years ago. I think that it's a continuing expression of developers looking at all the metrics of how people play their games, deciding that not a lot of people play their games all the way through to the end. And look, anytime you have a project of these sorts of scope, there's a finite amount of time, right? And
I don't know. I think that's a cop-out answer.
I don't think it's a cop-out.
I think it's a reality, genuinely.
The ending of Dishonored is so bad, it's like, did you just throw this shit together in the last 6 months?
Yeah.
Because it is compared to everything else they've done. It's like, wow, you got here. And then you're like, and they all lived happily ever after. The end.
And Bethesda like does that with some of their one-off titles. Like Rage's ending was exactly like that too. It was just like,
yeah, Rage's ending was really
cool. It was like I was having a really great time with the game, and then the ending came, and I was like, that was fucking it.
Yeah,
that was it.
It's another game last year that I can't remember what it
although,
was.
Although I do admit I would love to see a huge AAA title end with a, and it was only a dream. 60 hours later.
So, you know, I don't know. I think that it is definitely...
called Assassin's Creed.
Zing!
I think it definitely is a production reality that they're being, that developers are pushed to make a lot of cool shit happen quickly so that people get hooked, and that the people who give like those quick responses online and in forums and in reviews say, oh, this game's cool because it did this and this, and then there's a finite amount of resources to get the game developed, and by the time they get to the end, that peters out a lot. I think there's also a lack, because you have player agency inside of a game, that there continues to be a lot of struggles in getting pacing right throughout the game, and that includes delivering those different points and beats within a story. So
and an open world game's even more hard. More difficult.
I agree.
Totally more difficult.
I agree. I think that in 2013 or even in 2012, we're at a point where I'd like to see more sophistication and elegance in handling that, and more thoughtful design that really lays out the game as a experience across the course of the game. It doesn't, and you know, we talk about how long a game needs to be. I don't need the game to be 20 hours. If it's a perfectly paced 10-hour game, I'd be super happy, and that includes accommodating a really great ending, accommodating really great delivery throughout the course of the game. That's what I would love to see that in 2013. Mm-hmm. That would sound very soapboxy. Sorry.
That's all right. I think we all, I think we, you know, can empathize with that. I think we all would like that.
So hopefully, I would love to see better endings and better pacing and better design that thinks about how players are playing games and moving through games, because we've got a lot of cool narrative games coming in 2013. DMC, which I have a copy now. Do any of you guys have DMC?
No, yes. I couldn't have been less excited about it until like all these crazy good reviews keep coming out and everybody's like, oh.
Yeah, the guy in our office who played it said, I mean, he's not reviewing it for us, but he said if he would have scored it 5 out of 5.
I played a lot of it over the course of various events coming up, and I read about all the stuff that people are raving about, and I'm like, yeah, I remember that in the demo, but I didn't like it. See, why are you liking it now?
All the footage that I've seen, I mean, really, the reaction it gives me is I want to punch Dante in his hipster face. it really is grating. It's one of those kids that I want to choke at the mall.
Like all those filters that they put. Anyway.
All right. So you have to wait till next week for DMC. Also out next week is Ni No Kuni, which I pre-ordered this morning. And I'm so stoked for that. I did not spend $100. So I just bought I ordered the regular version. Yeah. I couldn't bring myself to bust that $100.
I'm super excited for that game.
Anyway, if you stick around though right now, when we come back on the other side, we are going to take a little more serious tilt. Jeff Mattis has been following the developments from Washington, D.C., where we've obviously had a tremendous amount of attention on gun control regulation and video games once again involved in that firestorm. Maybe not at the center of the debate, but certainly a part of the debate. And we're going to take that up when Weekend Confirmed continues. All right, who's ready to go to winter music with me?
Where's my glow sticks, man?
I know, right? That was awesome.
I'm seriously ready to go to winter music. All right, so we're back for the second half, kicking off with Jeff Mattis and Torsos of Doom.
Yeah, so, well, okay, before we dive into the super craziness here, I do want to, on a quick note, just say I finished playing the first act of Kentucky Route Zero. Mm. I love it. It's very short, but it's well worth, you know, if you buy the whole thing at once, it's like basically works out to $5 an episode. This was $5 for about an hour and a little over an hour's worth of entertainment. But it is an adventure game that actually makes you get introspective in terms of its narrative delivery. It's very poetic. It's very, very cool. Well worth the price of admission, in my opinion. But, you know, again, if you're valuing your games on an hour to dollar ratio, you might have a problem with it. Anyway, it's really, really wonderful, really, really great experience. Highly recommend it. Kentucky Route Zero. Anyway, on to the heavier stuff, which is I sort of want to talk about a bunch of different issues. It's sort of a catch-all related to all of the discussion. Well, specifically when the vice president and the president started talking about looking into researching doing some research into a possible correlation between video games and real-world violence. We know that many, many, many studies have been done in the past, none of which have been able to tie the two together in any real way. There have been studies that have shown that or have indicated that there's a possibility that aggressive
behaviors.
Feelings and behaviors, which totally makes sense. I mean, if you take that into the non-video gaming sphere – just think about how amped you get when you're watching your favorite football team kick ass on Sunday. It's the same sort of adrenaline thing. It's the same sort of not to digress too much, but there was a sort of an urban myth that Super Bowl Sunday was like the most prevalent case of domestic violence abuse cases reported.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just because the dip got cold.
That is not true. That is not.
What? I should hit you for that.
So
that would be domestic violence.
Now that's been largely debunked, but they have said there have been studies that show that things like that, things like that get your adrenaline pumped, that get you going and stuff can actually you know, I mean, if you're all amped up and somebody gets in your face, you're more likely to fight, that sort of thing. But there is no direct causal relationship in any of the studies that have been done between these two. Moving on to the present. So, you know, the president and the vice president have both, you know, because of the recent spat of school shootings, most notably the Newtown shootings in Connecticut, where the elementary school was shot up by a dude with an assault rifle. This I have in front of me H.R. 287, which is a bill proposed by, let's see, Congressman Matheson. And basically he introduced this bill, and the bill is short description is to require ratings label on video games and to prohibit the sales and rentals of adult rated video games to minors. It's a 3-page bill. You can find it online. The most interesting thing to me in reading it is that it really seems to take an antiquated approach to rating games. It talks a lot about the retail perspective and putting warning labels on boxes. It doesn't really do much to address, you know, digital content. It requires that all video games be rated, and whether or not that applies to independently developed efforts or not. I mean, so I don't know that this bill will actually pass, just based on how.
Does it establish a rating service or a rating?
Oh, it refer-
agency.
It refers to the ESRB specifically.
So it would rely on an outside agency to be accountable then for a government enforced rating system.
Well,
is that the idea?
So yeah, I mean, it's basically the ESRB obviously is a, you know, its own thing.
Self-regulatory.
It's self-regulatory. And has actually been praised by the people that actually use it as being a very thorough rating system and very informative to parents who actually know what they're looking at.
It's supposed to be the best out of all the industries that self-regulate more than movies and music. It's supposed to be the best rating system for any type of media.
Which is actually why you're seeing film start to move in that direction, start to look at the ESRB's rating system and consider changing how they, you know, the categories that they've got, or at least the information that they reveal in terms of what's objectionable about a film and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I guess you've got this on the one hand where you've got enthusiasts like us who have all played games, and I don't know that anybody at this table thinks that there's any sort of real tangible relationship between on-screen violence and making someone go out and, you know, do something in the real world that's violent. But when you compare this real world stuff to well, there's a bunch of stuff that's happened in you know, how video games are promoted and how they're sold to people. I mean, we just had a big controversy about the Dead Island Riptide Special Edition, which was supposed to come with a female torso that's all stabbed up and bloody and headless and armless and legless. And it's
barely clothed.
Barely clothed. And it's just, you know, you see stuff like that and you're like, well, you know, looking at it from an outsider who doesn't actually play games or who, you know, isn't as familiar with this medium as they should be. I mean, yeah, that stuff is going to get the most media attention. That is, and quite frankly, it offends most of us.
I don't think I know anybody that thought that was cool. I think there was one person in my Twitter feed that was like, I want that. It looks awesome. Because I was tweeting about how I thought it was just appalling. I mean, for a variety of reasons, but, you know, it's...
Most of all, it was the choice of swimsuit, right? I mean, come on, that pattern.
Well, the Union Jackets, like, it was, I have no offense to that, but I just can't believe that these things like this keep happening. Like, how does this get through several levels of approval? Because there's no way that thing got made and put into a...
Well, Aubrey Norris, you know, who does PR for them, offered to answer that question. Now, you know, an old friend of mine from 1UP who used to work with me, Jen Frank, led the Twitter response, I think, very well on the subject because she didn't let it drop. And people were responding. There were some weird responses, like Derek Smart. Remember him? He's a Battlecruiser 3000 AD guy. Was like, oh, it's just marketing. It's okay. Like, no, actually, that's not okay. And I think that Teardome in the We Can Confirm thread made a pretty good summation of this. It says that, to me, the most interesting thing to come out of Obama administration's politics-inspired violence witch hunt was Joe Biden's assertion that the game industry needs to work on their image, and really, he is right. When my wife sees advertisements for games while we watch football games on Sunday, all she sees are violent reflections of games, and it's embarrassing. Even though these commercials are sandwiched between plays where real people are doing physical harm to each other in the name of sport, the violence of the game commercials stands out like the gunshots they're simulating. "I've got 99 problems to be solved with a gun," cries Battlefield 3. "I'm coming home to hatchet you in the face with my filthy red coat," says Assassin's Creed 3. These are my non-gamer wife's perceptions of my favorite entertainment, and I would imagine that the majority of non-gamers' perceptions are similar. The real problem is publishers seem to believe that this is the only way to successfully market games. They treat gamers as if it takes violence to get us to purchase their products. Zombie boobs, oozing gore, and Kobe busting caps in those suckas are what publishers believe will sell. And the truth is, it works. Or at least these publishers seem to believe that their sales are linked to these violent marketing campaigns. So the question he poses to everybody, including us, is how can gamers change this? How can we take back our medium to help the public see that it isn't all gun fantasy?
Well, I mean, I think that's great. Those, a lot of those points are you know, points.
I think he pegged it.
Yeah, he totally pegged it.
I mean, he or she pegged it. Well, I guess he said his wife. So he pegged it.
Yeah, he pegged it. Well, it could be either way. But I mean, I think that it is a perception thing. It is absolutely... you know, it's hard to argue in favor of what gaming does when you have things like this zombie torso deal popping up, right? It's just, I don't know. It makes me embarrassed, you know, for my hobby when I'm trying to, because I spend a lot of my time trying to, you know, legitimize it to non-gamers, like people that I talk to. I go, oh, I played this and this and this, and people that only know Halo or Call of Duty are these high budget, big, you know, explosion based games are, you know, that's what you see. That's what you see as an average, as your Joe average consumer. So I don't know. I think it's a tough issue. I think it is, a lot of it is image related. I think that one of the main solutions is what exactly happened with this Dead Island thing, which was the community was like, what the fuck are you doing? This is ridiculous and stupid and you should get rid of it. And the company realized that the community was talking to them and they said, okay.
And they got a ton of publicity out of it.
They did, but I don't know that particular, I know they say no publicity is bad publicity, but
everybody knows the name Dead Island Riptide now.
Well, yeah. And anybody that's played it knows that it's
going to be.
Yeah. It's well, and that's the other thing about this particular example is it is a game that wasn't particularly good and managed to garner a Game of the Year edition and a collector's edition and a this and then that. And now this, you know.
Have they apologized, by the way, for that?
They have, sort of.
Aubrey did, didn't she? No, it wasn't her specifically. There was an official response that said that we're.
I don't, yeah.
We made a mistake.
I think the initial response.
They made a horrible mistake.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull up the official response.
It's not disproportionate to the numerous mistakes. I mean, that Hitman Absolution trailer. That
I was just going to bring it up. Yeah.
And even last week, you know, we were all excited about the Cyberpunk 2020.
I haven't seen that trailer. I
2077 trailer, which is, it's a cool trailer, and I got all excited about it. But my first reaction upon seeing it, it's basically close up of a gun ejaculating a bullet, hitting a barely clothed woman and like spewing gun juice all over her face. Right. And it's like,
well, and you look at
sexualized violence. It's
the Crysis 3 trailers and stuff are the exact same thing. It's, they just released a developer trailer about this new gun that can shoot 500 bullets per second. And it's like, and
it's the fetishization of guns in our culture. And I do not want to get up on a pedestal about this at all. In fact, I would argue, it's funny that you brought up the NFL, because I would argue that were it possible for the NFL to maim, injure, and destroy people and not actually have them hurt, that's what the NFL would be.
I mean UFC.
Well, the UFC. But what I'm saying is the only reason we have it
in
video games.
That was a little tongue-in-cheek, but not. I mean, I watched a UFC fight over the holiday break, and it was...
Oh, I watch UFC all the time. Yeah.
How do you watch that?
I don't watch it all alone at home. I watch it in the room with
five other guys,
like, and we're all drinking.
Anyway, that's a whole other subject.
Yeah.
That's a whole other subject.
Let me just finish this thought. Whenever you guys are ready.
Let me just finish this thought, because the point I'm trying to make is the reason video games do this is because it's fake.
And it's just, it's because we can ramp up to that level of I win and you lose. What's the ultimate expression of I win, you lose is I destroy you. And if sport could do that and have it not actually hurt anyone, they would. It is.
Well, and let's face it, like playing a violent shooter, competitive multiplayer online shooter is a lot more akin to playing a game of tag than it is is to actually running around and shooting. I mean, shit, running around and shooting at a paintball range is a lot closer to real world stuff than playing a video game.
I don't know if anybody saw that Penn and Teller bullshit about this very topic where they took a kid who was extremely good at Call of Duty and they brought him to a gun range. And by the time he was done, he was crying.
No, but I believe it. I mean,
Because it's not comparable.
No one thinks it's well.
But there's also something that it's not an easy subject. It's not a black and white issue.
It does tie into a larger umbrella issue of violence in, you know, human society and how it's expressed in entertainment and in culture. And that goes back to the beginning of the first time the first story was told about somebody hunting something, the violence and the action and
right. You know, and there's catharsis in that, which is helpful and human and powerful, and you need it.
And then there's also some stuff like the what they call the comedy of violence,
right,
which is so probably the earliest example of that when it was critically talked about was Titus Andronicus, which was one of Shakespeare's really early plays, like not really, you know, counted as one of his best works, but it is his most like his bloodiest, most violent like play that he has. I mean, there's dismemberments and body parts being picked up off stage and it's so over the top and so ridiculous that, you know, I'd liken it to the reaction that you get when you watch Pulp Fiction, where you get these, you know, in your face, very violent, like very shocking, but you laugh.
Yeah.
Because it's absurd and it's funny and it's not. Yeah. I mean, if you were really in a room and guys were getting shot, you wouldn't think it was very funny, but it's the way that it's presented. There is a, I don't know. And I think the reason that I'll just wrap this up real quick. I think the reason that the violence is in our entertainment and so pervasive in our entertainment is because you go back to, I mean, that's just part of human nature, the hunter-gatherer part of, you know, we're going to go out and we're going to, you know, when you're dealing with real-world problems about survival and like where I'm going to get food and shelter and all that sort of stuff, you're on edge. You're stimulated all the time. You're very much like, you know, those sorts of things in you are being fed. And we've, you know, evolved as a society and it's no longer necessary for everybody to go out to, you know, hunt their own food and, you know, we're not clubbing each other over the head and there's not as much, you know, you don't see guys getting in sword fights and stuff. There is always – the entertainment has always served as an outlet.
Exactly.
A cathartic sort of right. Like
– and I believe that we need to express – and live through some of those things, and entertainment allows us to do that. And I would argue, I have obviously nothing to base this on, but it's something that I sort of believe a priori is I wonder how many violent murders have been prevented by video games.
Well, I think that's,
you're never going to get that statistic because you don't know about the guy who goes home and fucking plays the fucking game to outlet that rage on something benign. Rather, and yes, there's going to be the mentally ill who
violence among youth has actually decreased in the past 10 years with the rise of video games. Just among youth. Now, this has nothing to do with gun related violence per se directly, but there is a. And who knows what the causality is, but there is definitely there's a decline with the rise of games.
Right, but the thing that's you know, concerning about this, and I agree, Jeff, that I think that people do need an outlet and that, you know, maybe games do provide an outlet, but for me particularly, I don't play certain games because they're too realistic. And it's really troubling to me that some developers, particularly the marketing for Battlefield 3, is it real or is it Battlefield? I don't want it to be real. I don't think anybody should want to pretend to kill a real person, which is why I particularly stay away from games that make it feel like it's a simulation instead of like a fantasy. Like, it's a fantasy to go into a world like Halo and shoot a bunch of aliens, right? Because you know that they're fake, that they're not real. But if you go into a game like Battlefield where you're shooting another human being or another soldier, that could be like a real person. You know, you could identify them as a person. And I think that's
only going to get worse as we
right. That's why we're on a slippery slope with some games and some developers. And Medal of Honor is notorious for picking hot button topics to put into their games. I mean, and I just think that.
Though, to be fair,
it's concerning and it's troublesome, and I understand why, you know, as the, you know, Tear Dome says here, that why we're getting criticized as a community and as a medium. It's understandable why people from the outside don't understand it.
You don't like that, but then, and that's well and good. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of people who like more realistic depictions. There's a number
of
people who loved Band of Brothers. There's a number of people who loved Saving Private Ryan, which has one of the most traumatic last 15 minutes. Actually, the first 10 minutes, also the last 15 minutes, the fight where with the guy, like the knife fight inside
the last 15 minutes is the bookend where you see old.
Okay. Well, so the part where they're right before the bridge, where the guy, where, you know, where the guy's fighting in, yeah. up in the upstairs room, and he's like the knife fight, and slowly kills it.
You're jumping to movies now instead of games.
Okay, but here's a game.
Because your argument was that as shooters get more and more realistic, they become more troublesome to you. So movies can be far more realistic because we're having real live actors.
You're not committing the action. And in the game, you're committing the action of actually doing it, which is the difference. You're an active participant in killing somebody or shooting them in the head or choking them out in the video game. Whereas in the movie, you're just a viewer, which is a different experience.
I would argue that if you're choking people out or doing really extreme stuff, that it's probably doesn't fall into that category of simulation that you're talking about. It's so if you look at a game like Arma 2, like go look at some of the Shaq Tactics videos that they've done, and it's like, you know, 100 people on a server running military operations, like, you know, formations of dudes and people coordinating, and you look at it and you're like, holy shit, this is really awesome. And I imagine it's a pretty awesome experience to be one of those foot soldiers in the group of 100 trying to, you know, fulfill your objectives. But it's really about the context of, I don't know, I don't necessarily think it's just making it realistic is the problem. It's sort of if you made a ultra hyper realistic, you know, serial killer game, that it's probably not what you would think. It would probably not be Manhunt, which is totally over the top splatterhouse, you know, grindhouse style, you know, in your face, throwing that stuff at you. The more disturbing stuff is the psychological stuff. And when you actually have killing somebody actually has a real impact. And there's just a lot of those factors that I don't think that anyone's even remotely close.
I disagree.
Yeah, and for the record, I'm not saying that those games are bad. They're just, I prefer not to play them.
Right.
I'm just saying from a non-gamer's perspective, I can see why they look at a game like that and find it troublesome or concerning.
And yet I would say that the fantasy of fiction is about eroding that, is about getting to a point where you have a suspension of disbelief and you are there in the fiction with them, whether it's you're reading a great book or you're watching a great movie. And while no, you're not the person executing the controls through a controller, you are very much projected into the scene and there with them. And I think that's why it comes to me down to being like such this perception problem that Tear Dome pointed out. We're in a place like, look, this is taking place right now in a time when the two most popular movies in the movie theater are Django, which is crazy.
The D is silent.
Django, which is crazy violent. And what's the other one? Gangster Wars or
Gangster Squad.
Gangster Squad, also super violent. So there's that context. Then even go back a year, we glorified a teen novel called Hunger Games and then had a movie where it's got kids running around slaughtering each other. Kids running around slaughtering each other. It's a great book. Let your preteen or your teens read this. It's awesome. They're going to love it. They'll learn how to shoot a bow and arrow into each other and kill them, because that's what we're going to do in the future to solve problems. I got a couple of points I want to wrap up here. I think that this is still a super holdover from the very strong reaction we had to the Columbine tragedy, where Doom was singled out. And Doom is very much like a Mortal Kombat sort of game. It's stuck in the consciousness. It like really drilled down, stuck in people's consciousness. It's like that ball and chain we're lugging around. We haven't been able to get away from it. And because it lingers in our consciousness, we continue to go back to video games. Video games do not have as well organized or put together a defense in the larger political sphere. They are still a media type. And so this is what worries me about the testing thing, which is what I wanted to get to, is – we've done these studies, and there should be and continue. There should be a continuing effort to study all of these things, because I mean that's what we want to do as a society. We always want to know those things.
Gathering information never hurt anyone, right?
Right. And my reaction to it wasn't that it's bad. It's that my concern is that the argument so far from the side that thinks that video games are bad for people, whether they be children or adults psychologically, has been that psychological studies don't always work right, and so we need to do more studies. My concern is that they keep fishing and fishing and fishing, and eventually they get the study that whatever reason does show some linkage, and they're like, well, this was the right study. Obviously there's a problem, and now this is the one study that's right. Well, and that they're not going to look at all of the other pieces. Like, in the bigger picture of things, we've got a lot of media. There's a lot of media that portrays a lot of violent things, and that's all well and good. I can tell you this, that no amount of – I was listening to this really interesting psychology professor talking on NPR the other day. And he was talking about the New York gun control bill that includes a piece of part of the legislation that says that a psychologist, whatever they call it, practitioner, would have to tell the state if someone that they were seeing had what they felt were, you know, violent tendencies, so that those they could go on a list. And
to themselves or others.
To themselves or others. And mm-hmm. And actually what he pointed out, like the really bad thing that we don't talk about, because we really don't talk about this in society, is that there were over 2 times as many gun suicides as homicides last year in the United States. And that's right. Really even more horrible to think about. Mm-hmm. And while I get the idea that, yes, this sounds altruistic and good on the surface, it violates the doctor-patient confidentiality idea. And that was a really – like that was right. Like a big deal. But then the point he went on to make – and I'll leave that out there. The point he went on to make was that he's like, look, you know what? We do our very best as psychiatric care providers to counsel and help these folks. And God knows, if we could predict the ones who were going to have these episodes, we would do everything within our current powers to treat them, mm-hmm. to make sure that they weren't able to harm themselves or harm others. We would take all those steps. The simple fact is that we don't have the science evolved that far. But I can tell you this much, if they don't have a gun in their hands, they don't have a high-powered assault rifle, if they don't have a gun that holds 20 bullets in the clip, then they're not going to be able to execute that plan.
And
that's pretty simple, straightforward stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sorry to be preachy. It's just,
no, I believe in the 1% approach, that, you know, the Bush doctrine and after 9/11 was, if we can pass laws that will stop, has even 1% chance to stop another terrorist attack, let's do it. I think the same applies here. If there's even a 1% chance that we can prevent another Sandy Hook. But that's a completely different issue.
America, we're never going to take away the Second Amendment. No one's ever going to take away your guns, people. No one's ever going to take away your guns.
But
reasonable control is
completely separate.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, the politics show.
Let me just say
one real quick thing. I think all the goal of this, the problem is that it's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing, because the types of people that will end up doing shit are going to be drawn to this kind of entertainment.
True.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that this kind of entertainment creates the kinds of people that do this kind of shit. So
– no.
The real problem is that the people that – the only people that can – that are close enough to understand the distinction as it's happening – are the parents. And unfortunately, we as a society haven't figured out a way to legislate good parenting yet. And they're trying. We're trying. It's like, well, we'll have this fucking organization that reviews shit for you and tells you exactly what's in it. And we'll have this other organization here that, you know, tells you when your kid's thinking bad stuff, and we'll make sure the teachers do this. Well, the problem is, it really – we just need to figure out how to make good parents. Yeah. And when a parent fucking knows the difference between a kid who's into Call of Duty and a kid who's into Call of Duty. Right. You know what I mean? And that's the real problem. And, you know, we can control the games, and we can control this or that, but the games don't necessarily create, but it does go hand in hand. Yes, the kid listens to heavy metal because he fucking wants to kill people, but the depressed kid who's not going to hurt anybody also listens to heavy metal.
Right.
You know, it's just that kind of stuff is – those kids are drawn to that kind of thing. The thing we need to do as an industry is to say we're a little too one-sided right now, and –
too much of our industry is just doing this one thing. And there's so much more interesting stuff to go on. Give it equal time and make sure that the richness of interactive entertainment is more than just pointing a gun and pulling a trigger.
You mean like Amen. Disney Infinity?
Amen. You just got to like that was such a good summation.
That's why I was hoping Disney Infinity wouldn't have so much just combat.
Amen.
I actually really love that. It was very well said. I do have the response if you guys are interested.
Oh, from Deep Silver?
From Deep Silver. Oh, yeah. So interesting, at the beginning of the day, before the outcry happened, Their marketing director said that the statue is utterly dead island, in quotes, and that would make a striking conversation piece on any discerning zombie gamer's mantle.
Why do you have a female corpse on your desk, dude? So,
especially on a blind date.
Right. Yeah. So that
striking
was,
conversation.
That was the morning statement. The
especially when
late
walking
afternoon,
on Johnny,
early
fun with it.
Evening statement was, we sincerely regret this choice. We are collecting feedback continuously from the Dead Island community as well as the international gaming community at large for ongoing internal meetings with Deep Silver's entire international team today. For now, we want to reiterate to the community, fans, and industry how deeply sorry we are and that we are committed to making sure this will never happen again.
Turns out the conversations that were started were not what we expected.
So now we're launching the new Man Torso.
Man Torso.
Stab Zombie Torso Collector's Edition.
Yeah, they missed the mark.
Well, Jeff, it's to you to wrap your segment. I would say, though, in answer to Tierdome's question, how can gamers change this? Maintain the vocal conversation. Make sure that the Deep Silvers, the Electronic Arts, the every other publisher out there hear what you're saying, and that you don't want to just be spoken to as someone who wants to bust caps in somebody or like, yeah, you know what? It's fine. Have a game that has violence in it. I would love to see, though, as Rockstar markets Grand Theft Auto, which is sure to have a lot of violence in it, for them to emphasize all the other things that are in it. We have had great movies and books that have violence as part of them because they're a part of the narrative, but that didn't mean that they were always the like only thing you saw.
I'm not so sure that Grand Theft Auto was the best.
I know. That's why I threw it out there. Okay. Jeff Mattis.
So, well, that is probably a better summation of this whole thing than I could come up with. So I will end this with a joke that I thought of when you brought up Django. And the joke is, what is the similarity between Mike D'Antoni's Lakers and Django?
What?
There's a lot of shooting and the D is silent.
Lakers joke.
Take us to the break.
Yes. We'll be right back with more Weekend Confirmed after this.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. And bringing it home strong, the man who was the source material or the inspiration for our new format. Hopefully you guys like it. Give us lots of feedback. Definitely listening.
It'll evolve.
Mr. Jeff Cannata.
So I'm going to talk about a violent game. there was a little bit of a mini sort of press tour of a new Diablo-esque game, isometric top-down action RPG, which is really one of my probably two or three favorite kinds of games in existence. So I'm excited about this game. It's called Path of Exile, and it's from a very passionate group of guys down in Australia, right?
New Zealand.
God damn it, they're gonna. God damn it.
Grinding Gears games.
New Zealand.
Kiwis.
I talked to a guy on the phone from Australia today, so that's why I got it confused. Anywho, some really interesting things going on here. It's very much Diablo. They're very big Diablo 2 fans, so it's very much a you know, derived from all the Diablo 2 influences.
You should give the background. I mean, this is a 20-person team now.
Labor of love.
Basically two folks who were so in love with it 6 years ago that they set out to make the
ultimate Diablo
Diablo 2 sequel. Yeah.
And it's been in beta for a while now. They have like thousands of players playing it already, and it's about to come into open beta in the next few days.
On the 23rd.
Yeah. So I got a presentation, got to play it, and it looks, first of all, very pretty, very, very pretty game. Art, very cool. And, you know, you probably already know if you're going to like a game like this because it's Diablo. But here's the interesting part. They have some really, really cool innovations. And it got me jazzed about, I love guys that dig something and then really look at it with a skeptical eye and challenge their assumptions. For example, there's no gold in the game. None. It's a completely item-based economy. And this is a full multiplayer game. This is a loot fest, just like Diablo. But there is no gold to be had. You're not purchasing things from vendors.
It's kind of brilliant.
It's that simple. Yeah. There is no money.
There's no money. It's a completely item-based economy.
Wait, so how does the real money auction house work?
Well, there's money.
Oh, right.
When you go to vendors, you trade with them in the same way that you would trade with another player. It's literally the exact same window that pops up, which is interesting. And the way that trade works is they found a way to make every item in the game potentially worth something. So whereas in most of these kinds of loot-based games, you're getting a lot of trash that you're just going to sell to vendors, all these white items that are worthless and you're just waiting for blues mm-hmm. and oranges and stuff to drop, purples, whatever. In this game, there are these – everything is itemized, which is pretty smart. For example, there's items that drop that are sort of upgrade potions kind of things. You'll apply it to a white item and it turns it into a green item, or it turns a green item into a blue item, or it'll hop skip it all the way up to an orange item or whatever. So it adds – attributes. So you can kind of see what kind of item it is already as a white item and go, oh, I can apply my, you know, shards of upgrade or whatever they're going to be called. And it'll turn it into something that I can see that this is useful, but I can add more stats to it. Mm. Super cool. It really creates a new, different kind of economy that makes every item potentially good. The other thing about itemizing everything is all your skills in the game are items. So you will loot – sometimes you get them as quest rewards, but you will also loot a crystal of some kind that is a skill. And then you slot that into one of your items and it, you know, gives you fireballs or whatever. And then you can add another gem that – turns those fireballs into like triple fireballs or whatever. So you can like create these combinations of things.
Yeah, you know what I took away from playing this game for the last two nights? Somebody likes them some Final Fantasy.
Oh, interesting.
Because interesting. Those gems, they're materia.
Yeah, it's true.
Oh, and in the upgrade trees for the characters?
And the passes.
Well, now that passes, is nutty.
That is totally Final
it's
Fantasy.
It's the orbs. It's the Sphere Grid from Final Fantasy X gone absolutely ballistic.
Gone
incredibly ballistic.
When you open up the – so here's what they do. There's classes. You select a class at the beginning of the game. But there is no restriction on what skill tree – your class can have any skill from any skill tree as long as you can get to it. And the map of the skill tree is this like – enormous, sprawling, crazy multi-tree thing that all intersects.
Did you play Final Fantasy X?
Yeah.
Okay, so you remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like, I mean, it's, yes.
So I spent like 20 minutes studying this one in Path of Exile last night. And what's really fascinating to me is that the design of it looks at first like scroll work, but it's really cleverly thought out.
Right.
Because what it does is it's very intricate. What it does is it offers you sort of two paths forward. It says, do you want to improve your primary attributes? Do you want more dexterity and more intelligence and more strength? Or do you want to go down this path? And by the way, Garnet, if you go down this path, you're going to be investing for a while. But when you get to the end of it, you're going to get a really cool ability.
And they're really different kinds of cool abilities. It's not just the kind of cool ability that's like, oh, it's the biggest of the fireballs. It is, you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
at the end
exactly.
of the skill tree,
yeah.
it'll be like, oh, you get to do the
and
bigger
that's an
version.
Even bigger one.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is the goal that they seem to have set out for themselves is to make those ending nodes change up your play style in a really dramatic way. So it'll be something like your skills. Oh God, I want to think of a very specific one, and I'm blanking. Do you have one in your head that you remember? It'll be more like your skill acts in a completely different way, like blood magic was one of them, where now instead of it taking away mana, it takes away health, all your skills. So you're now playing in a completely different fashion, but your skills are like way more powerful than they used to be. So the risk reward is a completely different equation than it was before. And that's just one example. There's like, he showed me like 5 or 10 different things that are wildly different play styles.
And as you get there, you can go back to that sort of, it's like there's a main highway. It's almost like a roadmap. It's like there's a main highway running through this sphere grid that has all of the like regular rest stops along the way of plus 10 dex, plus 10 strength, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then there's like the side excursions, and you get to decide like which side excursions am I going to go on. But because it's a forking path, you can always get partway down and get, say, well, now you know what? Now I'm up to level 12, and though I'm really going down the path to getting that blood magic, I need a little more intelligence now.
Yeah.
And so you go back and plug a couple more points and, you know, next time into intelligence. They're like, then you can go back to that.
And there's nothing off limits from class to class. It's just how far away you have to go to get to it.
You could trek across the whole thing.
You said they're really trying to make it so that character customization is paramount, so that, you know, 100 different people playing can all have slightly different builds. There's no one right build for any different class, and you can make a hybrid class however hybrid you want it to be. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's really pretty
well, and
pretty
you're
cool.
Very not locked into anything, because again, your active skills are gems,
right?
And those gems, unlike other times when you socket them, are unsocketable for free. So it's just basically like you're carrying around this satchel full of all these different skills, and if you want to use your double strike skill because you're dual wielding, well, you take out that one and you plug it into your dagger, and now you have that a skill. But if you like to go back and decide, no, actually, I don't want to use that skill, I want to use the assassination skill, you like swap them out, and they're color coded by primary attributes. So there's a dex, mana, and a strength one.
Yeah.
And then so it's really rich system that allows a whole lot of ways to do different things in it.
It's brilliant because the whole name of the game in these type of games is looting shit.
Yeah.
So like, why not make everything something you can loot? So I could potentially loot a brand new skill.
So question for you then, since you mentioned your satchel, there must be some kind of really complex inventory system if everything's an item, right? Can you like describe it a little bit?
I was like, so does that mean that you're just like constantly filling up your inventory? He's like, well, and he showed me this massive inventory. But I mean,
I feel about that though, having to cycle through all of those different items. Did you guys find it tedious?
It's like Diablo and Torchlight. You have a big grid with different size shapes that go in it.
It's also like, like
you're like, it's just part of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of part of the
genre. It works like all those games, but it's more akin for me to Borderlands than it is, because Borderlands, like, potentially every time somebody dies there's something useful. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas a lot of those games it's pretty easy to see right away, like, oh, there's nothing.
I gotta wait to kill the really big dude before I get another sword or whatever.
And with Borderlands it feels more like, well, I mean, looking at it, it seems like a good gun, but then I gotta try it out, you know. It's more like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because now like even crap that you would usually just sell to a vendor could potentially be
something.
What
did you guys
good.
Start with as your starting
The fighter. I did the fighter.
I started with the ranger.
I also did the marauder.
The marauder.
Well, it's mainly because I never play warriors, but they're wiping everything in a few days. So
Yeah.
But that's it. So by the way, if you're interested in this game, it is going to be free to play. It's called Path of Exile. It's pathofexile.com. You can jump into it starting next Tuesday or Wednesday, whichever day is the 23rd. Free to play, open beta, and they're not going to wipe. I mean, that's it. These guys are also gamers, which is really cool, because all those things that are typically annoying about this stuff, they're like, why would we wipe after that? It's the open beta. Go play the game. Have a good time.
Another thing that you mentioned, the free-to-play part, and one of the things they kept emphasizing to me at the meeting was that it's all cosmetic shit. Anything that you pay for is going to be cosmetic. So they claim that you're never going to buy XP boosts, you're never going to buy better weapons, you're never going to – it's
– good.
And they have PvP in the game, so they said they're very conscious of the fact that, you know, we're making a game where –
we don't want people to just buy their way to the top.
They have some crazy PvP modes. They have some really tough PvP modes.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like what David Brevik told me about Marvel Heroes. The same style of game, the top down, you know.
Right. Except with Marvel Heroes, it's a bit of a bummer because they're trapped in that
IP.
Trapped in the IP. I mean, there's an awesome IP, and I can't wait to play that game, but they're trapped. Like, I can't get an awesome looking thing for Wolverine because Wolverine looks the way Wolverine looks.
No, you do. You get customizable pieces that are costumes pieces that you get.
You do get costume pieces, but they're like within costume
sets. The Golden Age Wolverine.
Yeah.
The modern.
I'm not going to get like Wolverine gets.
Yeah, and they don't have the deep RPG skill tree system that sounds like Path of Exile has. I mean, there is like a leveling up system, but it's not. It doesn't sound as comprehensive.
See, it's funny. I started Path of Exile day before yesterday, and it didn't catch me the first time. And then I played it last night, and it did get its hook into me. And I thought that was really impressive because I think one of the things that gets overlooked in these games is the value of strong characters. Mm-hmm. Because you think back to Diablo, and I think that oftentimes if you're looking at it from an outside design analysis perspective, you might say, oh, well, it didn't have characters, but it did have characters. The Barbarian was a character.
Sure.
The Amazon was a character, and they were really cool characters and really well developed and designed and had these really great aesthetic appeals to them. And I think that one of the weaknesses of Path of Exile is that the characters are not appealing.
I will agree with you, they're on the generic side, and the unappealing side, but I really liked the presentation of the character selection screen.
It's cool.
It's where they're all standing in the shadows, and you click one, and they come out. And
I'll trade you presentation of the screen for good characters.
Yeah, no, I will take. Yeah, that's fair.
My bad Sinead O'Connor Ranger is terrible looking. I'm like, yes, put a helmet on her, please. Please. I mean, that's what I'm saying is like, because you want to build that attachment to those characters. You're going to spend a lot of time with them. And the other thing, because I want to,
That encourage you that like aesthetic is what they're making their money on? It feels like, because it's all going to be cosmetic stuff that they want you to pay for. I feel like
it's intentional. They're like, okay, these guys look a little too good.
Well, am I going to be able to buy a better UI?
Give that guy a hair lift.
Because the UI in the game is really dated and not nice.
Diablo 2.
It's maybe worse. There's lots of parts in there that are just like typewriter font inside of badly.
Well, it's in beta.
I know. I'm pointing out some of these other things because there are so many pieces that are really promising. I mean, the design work they put into this, I understand now why the cocktail napkin rep on this thing is it's the Diablo 3 that Diablo 3 should have been. It's because they put a lot of work into the design side of it that I think they succeeded in places that Blizzard didn't, with already the things we've talked about, but also really just cool small tweaks like the bottles. So you always have like these potions you're quaffing all the time in these games. Like you're down in mana and health potions to stay alive, right? Yeah. And the way they work in this game is just really genius. You have empty bottles, and as you knock down enemies, they refill themselves, they replenish themselves. And some of them are magic and have different boosts that they give you, so that now let's say you have health potion, you have health bottle 1, health bottle 2, health bottle 3. Well, you might want to actually hit button 2 instead of button 1 if button 2 gives you a speed boost and you're being overwhelmed versus button 1, which gives you a little armor boost. That's
even
really cool.
Even cooler
ideas.
Than that though is the maps. Have you seen this? The maps are lootable items. So you get a map to
For
the dungeons.
Yes.
And the maps can be magic. So you can get like, I can have a version of a map, and Jeff can have a version of that same dungeon, but his is a magic map that says that all the monsters in there are +5 or whatever to whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get better loot if we go into his. So if you invite me into your version of the map, we get better loot.
See, that's rad. That's
it's cool. Super cool. Yeah. And it's again, this itemization of everything where, like, I'm excited because I looted a map. That's magic. You know? Like, that's awesome.
I know. It's really cool. Super awesome. I like also I love how they solved the whole long-running debate about armor and mages. It's like, how can mages clunk around in armor? Well, so they have energy shield.
Yeah.
And the energy shield idea is really cool. So your heavier, like, chain mails and that sort of thing, they give you physical armor and armor boost. But then you have robes, and it's always like, how does a robe have any armor? Well, a robe wouldn't have armor, but a robe could be imbued with energy magic. And so you've got now this really cool, like, around your health orb, a little little glimmer of a shield on the side of it that is your energy armor value. And you can mix and match. So you can also, you know, like, give yourself some energy armor and some physical armor. It, like, makes so much more sense about the way it all goes together. I think that the design elements they put in this thing are really, really good. I'm stopping playing now because I don't want to go any further because it's going to wipe in a week. I'm just stopping now, and then I'm going to like dive back in on Tuesday. It's
pretty cool.
It's definitely a hook.
Yeah, I'm definitely jumping back in there to chop up some fools.
Yeah.
Chop up some fools.
With my Marauder.
Here's the question that I have. Two of them. Number one, where does this leave Diablo 3? Because, first of all...
It's getting PvP, bros.
If you sit in there... Right. It's on the public test server now. Sort of.
So, I love Diablo 3. It was...
I know you did.
Very close to being my game of the year.
So, if you're sitting there reading the chat window in Path of Exile, it's pretty rough for Diablo 3. Obviously, that would be where you would see it, because there's people who are there are the people who are most disgusted with how Diablo 3 went. At the same time... You know, Diablo is finally releasing 1.07, which has this sort of duel. They're calling it dueling, where up to four people can go to one of four special environments and go fight each other. But they don't have world PvP. It's still like, who knows what's going on there. And now we've heard that the game's director, Jay Wilson, is stepping down to take on another creative assignment within Blizzard. What's up with where is Diablo 3? What's its legacy? You're the big fan. Is there any prayer for it? Is it a zombie?
It sold like gangbusters. I'm sure it made them tons of money.
Yep.
It was an awesome experience. Like our expectations are so inflated for Blizzard in general and that franchise in specific. Like,
does there need to be a legacy?
Well, I mean, it's just
the prior two games had one.
That's the problem. Is you're looking at Diablo 1 and 2, and they are these juggernauts of staying power and cultural relevance and computer gaming history.
But that was a different time in gaming.
True.
Yeah.
That was a decade ago, over a decade ago. The game space is much, much different today than it was then.
I submit that Diablo 3 brought such an interesting take to the table. I know it's not something that struck your fancy, Garnet, but the idea of multiple builds of skill sets that all are viable and that you can switch out at any time and make into creative palettes, really, of play style.
Well, it's like the socketing thing, except like way reduced down from a customization standpoint. I mean, that idea of being able to make your dude into whatever you want is cool. Like, you know, I'm going to put in, you know, I need to switch out my abilities. Whatever. That's really awesome. Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you.
No, not at all. You're agreeing with me, and I think that is a concept that they brought that into WoW. You know, with Mists of Pandaria, that's the idea of trying to create multiple viable builds so that you can express your creativity in the game rather than just your efficiency. And I think for my money, that's the future of role playing, because I really get a strong distaste for this is the way to play this class syndrome. There's one build. If you're not doing that build, you're stupid, noob, get out. Like, I don't want to be hamstrung like that. I want to be able to express my version of these characters and live inside that, like, experiment, you know, figure out what
that's
I
the
like.
Role playing.
Yeah.
That's the role playing.
Yeah. And somehow that got lost over the last few years. And there is just this one, like the min maxing internet culture has bullied out any form of creative gameplay. And I think bravo to Blizzard for kind of recognizing that and addressing it in some big franchises.
That's a good point. I think that one of the things about Diablo 3 that I had hoped for that didn't materialize. One of the, like, these games are fantastic when you play them with other people, but yet they all remain appointment playing. Mm-hmm. And I think that somehow or other, I would love to sit down with a designer or even just like work on like trying to figure out how do you create a really open environment that makes it easy for people to hop into pickup groups and go play together and do things. And I think one of the biggest pioneers in that field is the world events of Guild Wars 2, because what happens there is that sort of organic people playing together, and you have those moments. I don't know how you make it. I haven't had that I've thought about it. I'm not sure I know the answer, but I think that that's one of the things that I had really hoped for in Diablo 3, because in Diablo 2, you know, even in Diablo, you go back to Diablo, like, you remember, like, you were like in those chat rooms and all the characters are down at the bottom and you were like talking to people, and it wasn't really any better in Diablo 3. And yet at the same time, the game's best when you play it with other folks. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have a friend who's playing it all the time, and the way our world is, are you just going to jump into public games? Like, jumping into public games is okay, but it's still like rough, awkward moment where you jump into a public game. You don't know who's going to be playing. You don't know how you're going to play together. It's like, there's got to be a way to smooth that out. There's got to be a way to recreate the Traveler's Inn sort of experience.
Well, I would say Diablo 3 did drop in, drop out about as good as anyone has ever done it.
Technically, it did it really well. I agree with that.
And would you say that Borderlands is any different? That
no, it's still appointment playing.
A game that's better with friends and to the detriment of its single player.
I don't think that that's the game, though. I think the gaming experience, regardless of what the actual game is always better with friends.
Life is better with people around.
Like, it's more fun to do things in a group when those people in the group are your friends. Like, that's just the way it is. It has nothing to do with, like, the fault of the game. That's just social, like, the way life is, you know?
And one of the places I can go shoot hoops by myself and practice my free throws.
Anything's funner when you're playing with your friends.
And
yes.
One of the ways we can really hope for a game designed to evolve in the coming years is to continue to make the bringing together of people to play together less of a go to a chat room, pick people to play together, find a server to play together, we will play this time, and have it be a more organic sort of ordinary normal mingling.
Yeah.
Because that would be really cool. So my other question about this genre is, why is Borderlands now the best Diablo-like game?
I don't know if I would agree with the premise, but if
it's
I
a challenging
did,
premise, if you were to agree with it.
Man, that grind is so
good. How does Borderlands hold the crown, at least right now, for being the game that people are just crazy about consuming?
I mean, I think the grind is fun, and the loot that you get is, like,
crazy.
It's fun to use, but it's actually, like, in addition to a cool thing that you have that makes your character better, you're, like, looking at this crazy freaking new contraption with spinning crap on it, and, like, you know, it's very, like, satisfying to loot stuff and use that stuff against others.
And the use of it varies loot to loot. I mean, if you get a new sword in a fantasy game, it's going to look different. It's going to have better stats, but it's still a sword.
Right.
You still swing it.
Right.
If I get a new gun in Borderlands, maybe it lobs bullets. Maybe it shoots bullets and then you have to heat it up again. Or maybe it shoots them really fast. Or maybe it freezes something. It's such a wild card that is really kind of fun. And also I think the first personness of it is attractive to a lot of people. As well.
What's the hook for you, Andrew? Because I get the sense that you don't really like top-down, isometric, like Diablo-like games, right? Are those not your cup of tea?
I don't dislike them. I'm just not drawn to them the way I'm drawn to, like, a first-person or even, like, a third-person over-the-shoulder kind of experience.
But for as much as we play Borderlands, I know you love you some Borderlands.
I love, love, love Borderlands. I've said that on the show several times.
So what is it?
I think it's the co-op with friends. Like, I love playing with my friends in Borderlands. I agree with Jeff that it also is seeing all the crazy loot that your character gets, you know, and being able to see the cool customizations with the heads and the costumes now that they have added. There's, like, so many different cool ones. You can just, like, you know, do, like, a panorama of your character and, like, see this cool outfit and, you know, the cars and the world.
I think that
and
aspect is so much better in an isometric game. I love looking down.
I would agree with that.
And seeing, like, the new awesome armor I got or whatever.
I just feel like I'm too far away. In the top-down games, I feel like I'm too far away from my character. That the pie-in-the-sky view is just, like, I want to be...
Scroll wheel is your friend.
Yeah, well, yes, I know. But, like, I feel like I want to be much closer, like, from a first-person perspective. And I don't know why I feel like the leveling system in Borderlands is more satisfying in certain ways. Not to say that I don't like a deep, you know, RPG leveling system, because as I said to you guys earlier, I'm, like, back end obsessed in Skyrim now, which has a really deep RPG system. But I don't know if I can put my finger on it. I think it's because that game is just so, like, irreverent and funny that it makes for a fun gaming experience.
Jeff Cannata, your segment, you can bring her home, and then we have to, like, wrap the show up, do finishing moves and all that kind of stuff. Are we going to do a tailgate?
You know, Mr. O&A.
I was like, he doesn't want to do two.
I
want to
do one.
Jeff, Jeff literally just picked against you and then came out for it.
That's not true. I didn't just literally.
Yeah, okay, you're right. You put some thought into it, but it was also.
I don't want to do it.
You made it easy.
There was at least one or two.
There was some upsets. There were some upsets last weekend.
Okay, bring home your segment.
All right. That's the end of my segment. Stick around.
Now we have to do.
We have to do finishing moves. Yeah.
Intro that.
You know what? It's not the end of the show until you've been finished. So let's finish them.
Finishing moves.
All right, I know that you guys have probably heard plenty about this, but I'm really enjoying XCOM in hardcore mode, and I know you guys think it's nuts because I'm usually against that sort of thing, but the thing is, XCOM hardcore mode, as we've talked about, doesn't kill you. You still continue. It's just you have to really think about all those things.
It makes you stronger.
It makes you stronger, and it's gotten... And I do love the idea of having named everybody. Jeff, you and Ariel are my two majors. You are the battlefield commanders and large and in charge. Jeff Mattis is the sniper on. You're my only sniper. I cannot get another sniper.
Oh, because I'm alive again.
You're alive again, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no.
But I'm dead, right?
Yeah, you got capped.
I'm your only sniper, though.
My first mission was my first run through. I got to like the fifth mission and made a grievous miscalculation and lost everybody and was like, okay, I'm not that far in. And then rather than suffer that, I'm going to go back. And so I started, and now I'm way in. I've got two majors, but I keep like trying to bring in youngsters now, and I can't get it to give me another sniper to save my life.
Yeah, that's
really
part
obnoxious.
Part of the fun is the crapshoot of your squad.
But it is so just so fun. It's really fun, and I really can't wait for someone to figure out how to refine that a little bit and stick it on an iPad or a tablet. Because I think it's gonna be great on tablet. I think there's a few refinements that I would also love to see in the inevitable sequel. Because you know there's gonna be a sequel coming, but there's so
DLC
many...
coming before that. I'm totally down with that.
There's so many ways to prosecute the advance on the battlefield, but the metagame is so good. The metagame, like when you're outside, it's like sometimes I'm like, aliens, I don't want to deal with any aliens right now. I got research going on over here. I got some
board game. It's a board game. It's awesome.
It is sort of board game-ish. If only that screen didn't look like an aquarium.
I like that little ant farm. It's a little ant farm you got going on.
I don't know. Anyway, that's it. If you have heard people talk about XCOM Hardcore and thought, oh, you know, I don't really want to risk it. It's really fun. The tension is great, but at the same time, you know that there is an ample supply of new soldiers to backfill your ranks. It just means you have to do other things. And what will happen is that the experience, as much as we read that user comment, remember, from like 4 or 5 shows ago about all the cool things that happened when he was defending his base after losing everybody?
Right.
Like, you'll have those moments. And to some degree, you'll have them. You'll have a new rookie out on a squad mission, and they'll either do something great, or you'll be feeling bad for him because you used him as a scout and they got dropped. But one way or the other, you'll have those cool moments, and that's kind of cool. Awesome. Jeff Mattis.
Yes. Well, I concur on the XCOM front. I just wanted to highlight, I know I talked a little bit about Joe Danger iOS last week. I've been playing a lot more of that. I'm having a blast with it. It's really, really fun. Very full featured. The touch controls are great. I think it's great. And the other one that I've been playing on iOS that is really fantastic is Anomaly Korea, which is the sequel to Anomaly Warzone Earth. Yeah. Also great. Another dose. New vehicles. New maps.
Reverse tower defense.
Yeah, reverse tower defense. Very, very. If you haven't checked out either one of those are both fantastic games, especially for an iPad. Really good.
Jeff Cannata.
This Sunday is the first of a series of episodes of Bonus Round that I was on. I'm excited, and I just wanted to let everybody know I only do shows now with two Jeffs. Jeff Keighley works, even though he spells it wrong.
You'll be on Giant Bomb at some point. So I'm sure.
Hey, that would be great. Call me, guys. Call me. That's really the wrong way to do that.
I thought the right way.
Anyway, check it out. It's on Game Trailers. So I had fun. It was really fun.
Andrea?
I don't really have something for a finishing move, so I will say this, inspired by one of the questions of the week that I don't think any of us got to, unfortunately, but there's a little bit, a tiny lull right now outside of, you know, like maybe 2 or 3 games. And so if you guys missed something from 2012, now would be the time to go back and play it. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, digging into my pile of shame. So if you have a pile of shame, which I'm sure we all do.
What are you going to play? What's on your pile?
Well, XCOM is in my pile. I want to finish Darksiders 2. That's in my pile.
Nice. Good one. Good one.
Because I really enjoyed that game. I feel like I almost need to throw away Amalur to keep myself from playing it again, because I really like that game. I really like that game.
Alexander Swinsky of Joystick went back to it and was having a good time. I want to go to it, and then I'm thinking, do I want to go back to it or I want to start over? But I was like 20 hours in, so I don't want to start over.
Yeah, well, Far Cry 3 is also in my pile of shame, so I have a lot of game to play. But take a look at your own pile and pick something and get on
pile.
It. Because February and March are going to come faster than you think, and yep. There's going to be so many great games coming out in the next couple of months, so get on it.
I'm already stocked because I'm in the midst of Persona 4-ing, which I still love, and Ni No Kuni gets here next week.
I can't wait for Ni No Kuni. So excited.
Next week, I have an excitement announcement. You know who's on next week?
No.
That is exciting.
Brendan Chang from Blendo Games.
Really?
Yeah, he's like a fan of the... I don't even think he has anything particularly to bring on. He just like has like reached out to us, is like, likes the show, is like, come on. So,
fun.
Awesome indie game developer.
Cool. Seriously. And,
yeah, favorite...
Adam Zombie Smasher. Probably like, you my know, favorite. That's probably.
So if you don't know him, he did Adam Zombie Smasher. He did Flotilla. Like super cool indie game and really nice guy. And I'm
excited to see what his segment will be about.
To have him on. Oh yeah, we have to reach out to him and let him know that he gets his segment. He'll challenge us. It'll be crazy. So there you go, folks. Thanks very much. Hope you enjoyed this. Be sure to give us some feedback on the new format, as well as, of course, anything else we talked about in the show. Catch up with Andrea on machinima.com. Jeff is, of course, with us here at Shack News and Indie Games Channel. Jeff Kanata on Bonus Round over there. Game Trailers.
That's right.
And but not on King of the Nerds.
No.
Sadly. So.
Not yet.
Thanks to Micah in the booth here at the Fantastic Atlantis Group here in Santa Monica. Great sound studio. Fantastic folks to work with. Dave and Ryan for their production support and video support. That is it. That is your weekend confirmed. And unless you're sticking around for my humbling, or as we used to call it, the tailgate before I got run over by that truck, we are ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink, hang away.
I need a drink, Alize.
I need a drink,
Alize.
I need a drink,
champagne.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
I need a drink, absolute.
I need a drink, hypnotic.
I need a drink, Hennessy.
I need a drink, gin and tonic.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew won't end no.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. And if I sound a little subdued, it's because I'm, pretty much...
the prognosticator of prognosticators.
I give up. This season has been the train wreck. I don't think in as many years as I watch football, I've ever had quite such a complete, inability to pick... and see the trends in the games. I had a disastrous injury ridden fall apart in all my fantasy leagues. It's just kind of been a gross. So yes, I'm
0-8.
I went 0-4 last week, and that brings me
to consistent. You're consistent.
That's freaking fantastic.
So
I'm
gonna ask you to pick Atlanta for me.
If you had picked opposite of me all the way through, you would be doing fantastic. We're down to the end here, of course. Patriots-Ravens. Patriots an 8.5-point favorite. Oh, by the way, Jeff Mattis and guest slots and engineer all in the top. Del Rio at 5-3. Andrea next at 4-4 with James. You're not doing so great either.
I'm terrible.
You're at 3-5.
3-5.
All right, so...
But I'm the only pick that I cared about last week came through.
Wow. What a domination.
Caper nicked.
Seahawks won and lost the same time.
It was nice.
That was
quite a comeback. I've got to tell you what, Seahawks. That was a hell of a comeback. By the way, that was a hell of a surge.
I was rooting for another home game in SF, so I kind of jinxed them too. I'm sorry about that, Del Rio.
So I'm sorry. I guess I still have to keep participating, so I hopefully won't be jinxing anybody's teams and making them upset. So.
Can we all agree that icing the kicker doesn't work?
Yeah.
Are we on the same page about that?
All right, so let's run through these. Jeff Mattis, you are in the top spot, so you have to pick first. Patriots, an 8.5-point favorite at home against the Ravens.
Pats. Patriots.
Okay. Patriots, yep. And you're going to give up the 8.5.
I am.
Andrea, we have no guest because you are the guest. So, Andrea, we'll let you pick next.
Well, the Patriots are going to win, like, hands down.
But are they going to cover 8.5?
Oh, yes, they will cover.
They're going to cover 8.5.
Hands are up.
Ravens were looking gesture. Pretty shaky last week. I'm just saying.
I'm going full Harbaugh. I'm all in on a Harbaugh.
A Harbaugh.
Two Harbaughs, one Super Bowl. I'll take the points gladly, but I will also I also think they can win straight up. I think they can beat the Patriots.
You think the Ravens can beat the Patriots?
I think they can.
You know you're going to be really pissed in about a millisecond because
you're agreeing with me.
I'm going to take the Ravens and the points. I'm going to take the Ravens and the points because, by the way, as people have kind of forgotten, that Patriots secondary was pretty suspect, and Flacco is wacko all of a
Flacco
sudden.
Flacco is wacko.
He's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So
I
let's,
know. That could throw pass. Yeah, yeah. It's great.
So who knows? If they can, they at least demonstrate they can put up some points. So yeah. They can put them up points to stick with an 8.5. How about you guys there in the booth? Dave says he's going with the Ravens because of the spread. But no, now wait, you have to go which way? He's sticking with them. He's going with the Ravens. And
I think if the Pats win, they win big.
And Micah's going with...
Which they will.
Hometown hero. Oh, he's... Oh, that's right.
Hey,
he's
Lewis.
That's right. He's a Baltimore guy. He's a Baltimore guy.
That's right.
So there you go. Okay. In the other game, we have the Niners on the road.
Yeah, baby.
After that offensive line just dominated the Packers.
Did you know that
front.
That was
it was such a sweet game to watch.
That was the biggest
as a Vikings fan
biggest
I was like,
offensive
yes, crush them
outpouring it was in 49er history.
I believe it.
I mean, this is the team of Joe Montana and Steve Young.
I felt like, you know, and by the way, Plan B and Andrew Pfister and a bunch of my other friends are Packer fans, and I just felt bad for them. Like, that defensive front just got mauled. I don't know if you've, like, I've watched a couple of breakdowns of it over the last week. Like, it is astounding how far, like, BJ Raj was getting pushed out of the,
I know.
Like, and they were, like, sometimes they were just, you guys were just, the Niners were just turning their center loose free on him, and it was just, like, by himself, like, moving him, you know, to a hash mark out of the way. Unbelievable. Like, unreal. So
what you do when you spend first round picks on O-line.
That line.
That's a pretty good running, too.
So there you go. Niners now installed as a 4-point favorite on the road in Atlanta.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking
Jeff,
them.
So you're obviously, Kanata, awesome. We know you're taking the Niners. Mattis?
I'm Bay Area guy. Niners.
Also taking the Niners.
I'm also taking the Niners.
Also taking the Niners. Dave? He's taking Atlanta at the points.
No.
Micah?
Did you see their last game?
Niners and Baltimore.
Harbaugh.
God.
Garnett, are you going to fuck me?
Yeah, but they're not playing. They hadn't played the Patriots.
See, here's the thing. I don't want to take the Niners and then have them lose.
Have it be on your head.
And be like, everybody like, you bastard son of a bitch. But I
don't think you're unlucky. I think you just made some bad choices. It's okay.
That's so much way worse than being unlucky.
The problem is I love it when, like, Nicole is here, because Nicole makes it sound like she's broke everything down. And I sit here and, like, spend all this time watching NFL Network and reading all these blogs and getting all into it. And then I'm, like, thinking about it, and it's like, yeah, you're an idiot.
Somebody in the forum was saying that we had to have Nicole on the week before the Super Bowl and just give her a half an hour to break down the game.
Kind of be amazing. I would listen to that. I would totally listen to that. I have to go with the Niners.
Oh, God.
After what I saw him do, like, man.
It's like Garnett's going to be 1-1 this week.
It's the kiss of death.
I got to go with him.
Dory is putting his arms up in triumph.
No, you can be you can be right once this year.
Yeah.
I don't see.
Oh, my God. If they lose, I'm going to call you so fast.
Yeah. I don't see it. I don't see Atlanta having the edge containment to handle the Kaepernick
crazy
attack.
No, they don't.
And the way, and they've let him throw the ball. Man, that dude, I was so wrong. He can so throw the football.
Yeah, he got an arm. That's why they put him in the first place was
holy
the arm.
Crap,
the legs was like
ball.
Bonus.
Well, they were constraining him, I guess, at first. But once they let him open it up, man.
The whole point was.
That throw he laid down there to Vernon Davis was sick.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Was sick.
And he can put some zip on that sucker. His problem is he doesn't rainbow it enough. They're all on the.
No, he's a laser.
Line.
He's gonna get people stepping in front of him. But
that's the reason they put him in the first place. Because Alex Smith, you know, he's great with those dinky dunk stuff, but he didn't have a deep threat.
the dinky dunks.
Jeff, you're pulling out all these. He's got some zip on it.
He's got dinky dunks.
He put a little mustard on that bitch.
He's not rainbowing it.
No, he's not a flibble flabble in the zippity zip.
All right. Hope everyone has a great weekend. We have 2 weeks to the Super Bowl after that.
Go Niners.
Woo. Hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. We will be back next week.